This is Hacker Public Radio episode 2993 for Wednesday the 22nd of January 2020. Today's show is entitled Hacker Public Radio 2019-20 New Year Show Episode 2. It is hosted by Kevin Wisher and is about 155 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is 8th Annual New Year Show with ThinkPads, Steam Engines and Corporate America Philosophy.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Oh, out there.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Tony.
I've literally just walked into the house and just gone back on the computer.
Okay.
I saw you come into the room, so.
No, well, I had been on a minute ago, but nobody was talking back to me, so I went and checked my audio, made sure everything was solid.
Ah, right. No, I was on for about an hour and a half. Just before midday today until about 1:30. I was talking to Alan and Ken and Dave. But we went out for a sunset walk, a winter sunset walk on New Year's Eve. So we just got back in.
Cool. Almost got nothing to talk about with you since we just talked on Sunday.
Yeah, well, we could always talk about something totally different.
Yeah. I see Netminer's logged in, but he's muted.
Yeah, he was there briefly when I checked in this morning about 10 o'clock and couldn't get my audio to work, and then realised when I re-logged on just before midday, realised that I had my audio muted with my keyboard mute button.
Yeah.
So that's why I hadn't been able to get it to work.
Yeah, I had the volume turned all the way off.
Aye.
Got that fixed.
I tried to activate push to talk because they prefer us to do that, but it wasn't working for some reason. So I sent Alan the login details for Mumble for the show, by the way.
Okay, cool. And we're talking about ThinkPads.
Yeah, that's the plan. We were having a chat about them today, but there's quite a bit to talk about. So
yeah. Well,
so it'd be great for the show.
I'll have a little bit to say, but not a whole lot.
I've got 3 or 4 of them here. I've got an X61S, and then I've got some of the 200s. I've got a 200 tablet, 201, early i5, I think that one is.
I got the X120E that's running Batacera, about it.
Right. But until he got his new laptops, Moss was running a 430? T430?
Yep, T430.
Yeah.
And an IdeaPad, which was stemmed or branched from the ThinkPad.
Yes, yeah. Is that the tablet crossover?
Yeah, I think that's a convertible.
Yeah.
Well, at least it goes flat. Ah, yes, it is a convertible.
Ah, brilliant.
I don't know if his particular model is, but I'm seeing a bunch of them are.
Right. I'm just going to go on Discord and see if there's anyone else around.
It's almost midnight in Beijing, Hong Kong, Manila, Singapore.
Yeah, I had that link up earlier on. Let me... Yeah, it's a great little... resource, that little New Year thing.
Yep, I had the New Year's celebration last night with a bunch of friends.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, supposed to go?
You gonna put DistroHopper's Digest on iTunes?
Well, in the few months ago, I tried it, and I was going around in circles. It kept telling me I needed an active account.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And it wouldn't let me, even though I'd got an active account. It said it wasn't active, and it wouldn't let me. So, and I wasn't the only one who was having the problem with it. Dan Lynch.
Right.
Was having the same problem for his new podcast. He couldn't get it on.
And everybody thought that in order for it to be considered active, you had to spend money on it or something?
Yeah, well, you definitely have to put activate a credit card on it. But I don't know whether until you'd bought anything, they classed it as active. But I think that was the whole issue, was they were talking to it. It seemed that you had to buy something before they would class it as active. I'm going to save this link that's just been put in the stream, and I'll put it next to my blogger so I can find it again. And I'll have a look at that at another time and see if I can have another go at getting it working. We're not doing too bad at the moment. Couple of the shows are coming up to 500 downloads.
Yeah, I saw that.
Never thought we'd get to 100, let alone 500.
Cool. Has anybody checked the Mintcast stats lately?
I don't know, but I can go and have a quick look now. Mintcast.
1,044 for 324.5. 324 is at 1,400. 323.5, 1,800. 322.5, 2,600. 322,
yeah.
2,800.
28, yeah, nearly 29.
1,000 on 321.5.
Everything below that is...
600, yeah. 4,000.
Yeah,
317.5 is at 3,900.
Yeah, you've got to go all the way down to 314 before it goes back below 3,000.
Right, and then 313.5 is 4,000.
Yeah,
and but 309 is 2,800. Then numbers start going down.
Yeah,
300.6 is 1,800.
Yeah,
we're I guess the interview series wasn't all that popular.
No, I think it was a bit fractured for some people, but and maybe some people listened to some of the interviews and not the others, because depending on who we were interviewing.
Yeah, and then below that, the average is, wow, that bounces all over the place.
Yeah.
2.5, 3.
And then if you go right the way back to Isaac and Rob, episode 166 was around the 2,000 mark. As was 63. Yeah, so I think part of the problem is, though, some of the earlier shows didn't actually get posted on archive.org originally. They only got posted later, I think.
Jumped on in what? September?
Pardon?
Last year we jumped on in, was it August or September?
October. We started. October 2018.
Yeah, the numbers haven't changed a whole lot since then.
No.
Gone a little bit up, but...
The one thing is, I don't think we've lost audience, or we may have lost some people, but we've gained it elsewhere.
Right. Well, the numbers on the last three episodes are a little low, but they'll probably go up in the next week or two.
Oh, yeah. It's a slow burn after the first little jump. It always takes a couple of weeks to get two and a half thousand.
Yeah. And you still have to wonder how accurate the numbers really are.
Yeah. And some people download podcasts on the podcatcher and then never listen to them.
And we've seen that a lot of times it takes a while when we know people are downloading before the numbers update in archive.org.
Yeah. That's the other thing. I have noticed occasionally I'll log into archive.org and check the DistroHopper's numbers, and they'll be at one figure, and then I'll check them a couple of days later and they'll have gone up a little bit, and then I'll go back in 24 hours later and they've gone back down. I think, what's that all about?
Right. They undownloaded it.
I don't think you can undownload the figures. It's just, I think it's a glitch with the servers for.
Yeah.
Just looking at Distro Hoppers now. And episode 4, 5, and 7 are all 400 plus. 4 and 7 are approaching the 500. 6 is 380.
Cool.
There's a good page on archive.org that explains how they do the stats. So it
oh, right.
Is
okay.
Unique. They do it exactly the same way as we did it on HPR. So they'll take the number of people who downloaded it, and based on the unique IP address, if you download a show one time from an IP address, they will consider that one download. So it's quite possible that if somebody's behind a proxy, and that proxy has, you know, there are 400 downloads to that person, there could be 400 downloads. So it's a very conservative way of doing it. Believe me, if you were doing commercial, the commercial people don't do it that way. They do it a lot more generous. Yeah, I think This Week in Tech one time described how they do it, and even theirs is a lot more conservative than what would if you went onto the main websites of people and classified what a watch is or a hit. 3 seconds or something on a YouTube video is considered to be a view.
Yeah, it's just, for me, it's just a guideline that we've got some kind of audience out there that likes what we're producing. I'm not as hung up on the figures as Moss is. I was just saying, Ken, you know, I thought we'd be lucky if we got 100 listeners to each episode.
It's quite cool.
Maybe one of these days we'll hit the dizzy heights of HPR episodes and get up to the 1600 to 2000.
Again, we're now suffering from the same thing that, you know, 400 downloads could be classified as one. But also, as you say yourself, there's no guarantee somebody downloads that they ever listen to it. But
that's right. Yeah.
On the other hand, with HPR especially, it's more about I take the view that it's based on the amount of feedback a show gets. And if that happens to be somebody going, thank you very much, 4 years later, you know, this really solved the problem, then, you know, that's a worthwhile episode to me, regardless of what the numbers were.
Well, this December, I've been really poor at listening to podcasts. I think I've listened to about 3 or 4. I've downloaded a shed load that I've got on my podcatcher that I've never listened to. And I've got to say, Ken, I don't think I've listened to an episode of HPR this month.
You're still welcome, community news.
But it seems
podcasting's turned hip again.
You think so?
Yeah, there's loads of people in work, and hey, have you heard of this thing called, you know, podcasting? And I heard as well on the Escape Pod podcast, where they were doing a sort of blog about podcasters are going, yeah, we've invented podcasting and started 2 years ago. Yeah, it's a bit disheartening, but okay. Yeah, no, but it is mainstream, you know, it's things like SoundCloud and all the rest. There are lots of people now podcasting and working, or podcasting to and from work and stuff, don't know. And a lot of the mainstream media are doing podcast-like
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So everything...
it's actually been a concern for some podcasters that mainstream media is breaking into the podcasting space and will eventually try and make it more difficult for, you know, average person to do a podcast.
Yep. That's my worry, and that's my fear, and that's the pitch I used when I put in the exact same pitch I put in the last 2 years into FOSDEM, last 3 years, and this year I just put in with the advent of commercial broadcasters coming into it with things like SoundCloud and basically other places that, and podcasts that don't publish their RSS feed. They have it on, like, there's a news outlet in the Netherlands. They have their feed, but they don't publish the they have it on iTunes, but they don't publish the RSS feed that they give to iTunes. It's really weird why they would do that. You need to go to the app, or you need to go to the website to play it. Oh, I want to download it. That's the whole point, to save money.
Yeah. Coming up to Happy New Year for Jakarta, Bangkok, Hanoi, Phnom Penh in just over a minute.
Yeah, I like listening to, well, I used to like listening to Ben Heck's podcast. And I thought he was just being intermittent because I was subscribed to his RSS. But then I go to his website and I find out he has been putting out podcasts. And there's just no RSS for it anymore. And it, the webpage says that it's just through iTunes, or says that there's an iTunes subscription that you can get. But when I go look for the website for that, I'm not finding it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think right now it's just on his website.
Yeah, just the mind boggles, you know, that you're not doing an RSS feed. I mean, it doesn't have to be right there at the beginning of the thing. It can be under other options, but the mind just boggles why you would not do an RSS feed. Because,
well, he had one. I guess they just didn't maintain it or something, or they wanted the actual statistics, so they're forcing people to go to the website to listen to it.
Not how it works. You still, if you're playing it from your own website, if you go to iTunes, it's the RSS feed. It's not coming from Apple. If our RSS feed comes either from archive.org or directly on the main website, depending on which one you have, but it's not Apple suddenly hosting everything. You're just redirected to the media on the server with which it has.
Yeah, archive.org have got the audio there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it goes through that. But when you think about companies like Apple trying to corner the market in these things, it makes me less inclined to actually publish our RSS to iTunes.
And you can if they have an RSS an iTunes link, you can. There's some services where
I tried
that. Pull it down, but why? At that point, I'm saying to myself, well, I don't want to listen to this because you're not making it easy.
Right.
Contact them. Usually, give them the three strikes thing.
Well, I did try some of those converters to turn the iTunes link into an RSS, and none of them worked, which is why I'm assuming that it's not on iTunes anymore either. And whenever I click on any of the iTunes link to at least, you know, try and see what's there, all it does is try and open iTunes, and I'm on a Linux machine.
Oh, Onky's just restarted the recording.
Yeah, it was so quick, though, it makes me think it was automatic. Onky, you there?
No, he's doing it remotely.
Yeah, he's still got his lips muted.
Yeah, there he is. Pretending. Yeah, pretending.
What,
Honky?
I'm just going to
leave very, very shortly, by the way, but I just thought I'd pop on and say hi.
I'm just going to mute myself for about 5 minutes because we're having takeaway for supper tonight, so I'm just going to make my choices and then I'll bob back in before it arrives. I'm back. You still there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here. There's not much going on.
No.
I'm gonna take a nap here in a little bit. That it was a busy night last night.
Right.
I usually don't drink, but it was there. I was there. Friends were there. And
so you had a few scoops, as we say.
Really nice caramel Crown Royal.
Oh.
Down real smooth.
All right. Well, I celebrated 33 years since I last picked up a glass on the Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm trying to remember when my dad quit drinking. Got to be like 15 years now.
Brilliant. I'm just going to go and see if there's anyone on Discord, see if Moss is around. Don't look like
Bo, jump on.
I'll send him a message.
I'll just post it in his Discord.
Have you?
No, I'm going to right now.
Right, okay. Ooh. I just sent Moss a message on Telegram because he was hanging around there a few minutes ago.
He likes to cuss a lot.
You've noticed.
What, my brother?
Oh, sorry, I thought you mentioned Moss. I was just talking about Moss. I thought you meant...
No, he doesn't cuss a lot. Brother cusses a lot.
Right. So how's little Joe?
He's doing good. He's a little cooped up. He acts out a little bit, but good.
Good.
Have any of the Tilts guys been on yet?
Not while I've been around. Netminer was around very briefly when I was on this morning. Josh posted a picture in the Mintcast Telegram channel of the Sydney fireworks. Looks quite cool.
Telegram?
Yeah, the Mintcast Telegram.
Much noise.
There was a lot of controversy about the Sydney fireworks this year because of all the bushfires and that surrounding the city. A lot of people didn't actually want them to happen, but obviously they did.
Somebody recommended some headphones to me yesterday, so I'm looking them up now.
What kind?
Astro A40s.
All right. If you find them, post the link in the Mumble and I'll have a look. Go. Thank you.
A little bit more than I want to pay, so I'm looking to see what the used market is like.
Oh, let me copy that and see what they are in this country.
I can find some for relatively cheap without the mix amp, but if it comes with a mix amp, I assume that it needs some kind of power boost.
Okay. Well, they were $150 for you. And it looks like they're £199.99 for us.
Ouch.
Yeah, so that's $260.
Yeah.
I think I'll stick to my £20 set that I've got. Yeah. Although it'd be nice to have one with a decent mic that doesn't leak into the headphones.
Yeah. Well, you can order a set of the Z2s. That's what I'm using now. Well, you'd have to order them probably from the U.S. And I usually the cheapest I see them is about $20, but I would assume that the $20 ones would need me to do some work on them.
Right. There is a set of Astros. Ah, just a minute.
Yeah, I found some cheap ones, but they don't have the mix amp or anything like that.
Yeah, I found the cheaper ones. They're £150 without the mix.
I can find one that has the main unit and the microphone.
So are they made in the States?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So I'm just wondering, because normally anything that's sold in the States is kind of, you know, transfers $1 to £1. So if you're buying it for, say, $100, we're normally paying £100 for it over here. Because you add, your prices tend to be before taxes, whereas our price tends to include tax.
There's the cheapest one I see, but it needs cushions and it needs the microphone.
Okay.
Still.
Ah.
And this is this mic I've seen for it so far, if I wanted to part it. Then the mix amp, if I wanted to get the mix amp too, $30 for the mix amp without cables.
I didn't realize you could buy the headset and microphone part separate.
With some you can.
Yeah, right. That's cool.
Like the Turtle Beach ones, I know they're not the highest quality, but the ones that with the removable microphone, you can find generic mics that work on it.
Right. Again, let me see if they're available on the UK eBay site. Oh, it looks like eBay's the place to buy Astro.
Finding better prices.
Oh, definitely. That headset that you've just done in dollars for $11.24, I can get it on eBay in pounds for $8.57. Ah, the only point, it's coming from the States, so postage kills it.
Yeah. That'll happen.
Yeah, that's the problem if they don't sell them in the UK. But they've got an Astro A10 gaming wired headset here for Xbox One with mic and that is UK, and that's 29 quid. Don't know what that one's like, the A10.
I don't know. I haven't tried much from Astro. I don't think I've tried anything from Astro.
That's more my kind of price range, 20, 30 quid.
Hello.
Hello, Alan.
How is everyone doing?
Oh, not too bad. Been for a walk and knackered me back, so I've just had to take some Cocodamol, but apart from
my gosh.
Yeah, I started suffering from real bad arthritis at the beginning of 2019, and so if I go for long walks now, it kills me.
I've been looking for friends who are coming over.
Oh, right. What have you made?
I bought some steak. Thought I'd splash out a little bit. Went to the local butcher's and got some steak just before he shut. And I'm doing that in a sous vide thing, a bath of water for three hours or so.
You've got your own sous vide machine?
It's not. Well, it's one of those ones that hooks over the side of a... If you've got a vessel big enough that you could put water in. And I just have a big Tupperware container that I just put it in and fill it with water. And that seems to work. And some Dauphinoise potato and some green beans and the asparagus. And I think that'll do.
Oh, very nice.
I've got two types of steak sauce. I'm going to do a peppercorn sauce and a blue cheese sauce because I know people like both of those. So I'm going to do both of them.
Oh, no. My missus would go, blue cheese. She's definitely not a fan of blue cheese.
I think that's a real north-south thing. I think I've rarely been anywhere in the north or Midlands and north where soft cheeses and blue cheeses are popular.
Yeah, I love me a bit of blue cheese. I'm not sure if it is a north-south, but yeah, it's definitely an acquired taste. Vein cheeses, as they call them.
So look forward to eating that later. But it's sat in the slow cooker, the sous vide now, so I don't have to think about it. So I thought I'd take a break for a couple of hours and come and chat to you, loonies.
Yeah, right. Well, Mike, we've just ordered our takeaway, so when that arrives, I'll be going off to eat my curry and then come back.
What curry do you tend to choose, and what do you have with it?
Well, I've just ordered a because I'm vegetarian, so I've just ordered a corn biryani and some tarkadol.
Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely!
Like me a bit of tarkadol. That's nice.
Yeah. Do you have any bread with it, or chapati, or something like that?
My wife will probably the meal she prefers comes with a big naan bread, so we'll probably share a bit of that. And I've got some poppadoms that I can stick in the microwave to have a couple of poppadoms as well.
Lovely. Perfect.
I like myself a little bit of an Indian. Went to a great... We were up in Scotland just before Christmas, came back Christmas Eve, and we took my stepson and his partner out. We went out for a meal together for Christmas, and we went to a really nice North Indian restaurant in the centre of Glasgow. Not the cheapest place I've ever been to. The whole meal was about 150 quid, but it was really... the food was beautiful. And the waiter took all four of our orders, didn't write anything down at all, and everything came perfectly.
I love it when they do that. Just makes you feel a little bit more special because they're being attentive and they're clearly...
Yeah, it was brilliant. But, you know, it was just a nice ambience in the restaurant and the food was gorgeous. And, really nice meal.
So is Ken still drilling?
I don't know. He just popped his head above the parapet for a couple of seconds a few minutes ago, but he's probably gone off to do whatever he was doing again. So what time are the guests coming around, Alan?
I've got 2 hours now, so I can chill out for a couple of hours. They're going to be here at 7:30, and I think if I've timed it right, everything should be ready about 8:30, something like that. So I should be able to hopefully get it all lined up right.
Right. So the kids will all be... Well, no, you've got teenagers, haven't you?
Yeah,
so they'll probably be out doing their own thing, will they?
No, they're going to stay in because we've decided we're going to... We went... It's my brother-in-law who's coming over with his wife.
All right.
And they're leaving their kids at home. So my two will have a meal with us and maybe stick around to play a few games. We've got a whole load of board games out to play and card games and stuff.
All right.
So we'll sit and play those for a bit and then have a few beers. And my son started staying up quite late over the holidays, and we're going to have to rein that in as we get towards going back to school next week.
Yes.
He's also started staying in bed until God knows what time in the morning. Like, I've been in there before 11, and he's still half completely asleep in his bed. Unfortunately, his bedroom is nice and warm and dark, so he can just stay in
there
for hours. 13.
No, that's normal for 13 to 15. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure I did it as well.
Yeah. Teenagers.
But I'm hoping we can play some games, because that's what we did. Last year, we went to my brother-in-law. They live up in Lymington Spa, and they got their games out. We had a meal, and their kids went to bed because they're quite a bit younger. And then we sat and played games, and there was a game that I'd never heard of before, and it's called something like One Night Ultimate Werewolf. And
oh, I've played it.
It's just great, isn't it?
One Night Werewolf, yeah.
It's so much fun. And we sat there playing it. The basic premise for anyone listening or who hasn't played it is there's a village, and you play the part of a character in the village, and the village is being attacked by werewolves, and you've got to identify who is the werewolf. And you may be one of the werewolves. You may pick a card at random. You may be a werewolf, or you might be a villager or one of the other characters. And so you each get one card that defines your character, and you put the card face down and then put it in the middle, just in front of you, so it's within reach. And then there's an app on the phone which has an audio narrator who tells everyone to close their eyes. And you just basically follow his instructions. So he says, close your eyes. And then he tells the werewolves, because there might be more than one, depending on how many people are playing. He asks the werewolves to open their eyes. And so if there's two of you, you both open your eyes and you know who the other werewolf is, right, at the start of the game. And then you close your eyes, and then other characters are told to do various things. And what they do is open their eyes, mess with the cards in the middle of the table, specifically like look at one or swap a card with another card in a very specific sequence. And then at the end it says, right, everyone close your eyes, and then everyone jiggle their card a little bit so that you can't tell whether it's been messed with or not. You just jiggle it a little bit. And then everyone opens their eyes. And then you start a few minutes of trying to argue about who is the werewolf with all your cards still face down and nobody allowed to look at them. And it's so much fun with people lying through their teeth to indicate that they are a villager. No, I'm a villager. I'm not a werewolf. I'm just a humble villager. But the one of the clinches is one of the characters is a tanner, and I think the story goes that his business is failing, and so he wants people to believe he's the werewolf so that he will get killed, right? Because the village is going to hunt down the werewolf and kill it, right?
Yeah.
And because his business is failing, he wants to be killed, and so he will try and pretend to be the werewolf. But you can't just say, hey everyone, I'm the werewolf, because everyone will say, well, no, you're not, you're clearly the tanner, because a real werewolf wouldn't say that. And so there's this whole logical deduction, a bit like Cluedo, you know, kind of trying to figure out who, and you argue for 5 minutes, and then you all have point at someone and decide who is the werewolf. And if you're the werewolf and you got away with it and everyone thought it was someone else, then, you know, you win. But if you're the werewolf and everyone points to you, you lose. The rounds only last like 10 minutes, but you can play it for hours, just over and over and over. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I played it at one of the local card shops.
Did I describe it right? Is that roughly how it goes? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's roughly how it goes.
So while we were playing last year, exactly a year ago, I thought, this is just a brilliant game. And I'd had a few beers, and I got my phone out and opened the Amazon app and found the game and, you know, bought it. And we carried on playing it for a few hours. And clearly I was so drunk that I later on in the evening said, oh, that's just a fantastic game. I should buy that. And I got my phone out, got the Amazon app and bought it again. Because when we got home a couple of days later, two boxes arrived in the post. And I thought, well, that's a bit weird. I don't remember buying it twice. And I looked in my Amazon order history, and sure enough, two hours apart, there were two orders for the same thing. Yes. Whoopsie.
Shopping.
Are you on? You're on the Mintcast Telegram channel, are you, Alan?
I certainly am. Yes, go and I haven't caught up with it recently.
Well, it's just Josh who's in Sydney at the moment. He's posted a few pics.
Oh, wow.
Of the fireworks.
Good. Are you on the Discord?
No, this is on Telegram.
Right. I'm just asking if Alan's on the Discord.
I didn't know there was a Discord. Feel free to ping me a link and I'll join it, along with the 35 other Discords I'm in.
let me invite.
The mumble.
Oh, have you put it in?
Perfect.
That's quite handy, actually, you being in there, because we can ping you messages about production stuff.
Oh, is that when where it gets organised?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Joe, do you know who the admins are for the Discord? Is it Moss or Leo?
Discord, it should be all of us.
Is it? I was just thinking of adding, because Alan's going to be in on the show, maybe putting him in the crew.
Oh, crew just list. Send him a link for the crew stuff.
Yeah. Trouble is with all this social media and all the different channels, I go into it in the morning and there's like 2,000 posts for the various channels to check. Think, nah, can't do that.
Yeah, my Telegram has a little indicator on it that just says 9 dot dot dot, which I think means 9999, over 9999 messages unread, because I'm a bunch of Telegrams and I just never read them.
Yeah, I tend to read the ones that have got the little at symbol next to it. That means someone's pinged me a message.
Oh, okay, I see how to do it. I find Popey and then I make him part of a Mintcast crew.
Yeah, you've done it.
Uh-oh.
I can see him there now.
Yep, now you have to be on every 2 weeks.
Yeah, just retire from that other podcast you do and come and join the Mintcast. Alan, while you're on, is there any chance of Laura ever coming back full-time onto the show?
I don't know. Maybe in the future, perhaps. It's difficult because... well, at the time, she was studying for a PhD.
Yeah.
And so that, like, just chewed up all her time. And I don't know if she even runs Ubuntu anymore because she works at IBM and her role changed, I think. And she got an offer of a new company laptop and she chose a Mac and she's running OS X now.
Ooh.
I think that's right. I hope I'm not maligning her, but I think that's the case.
Right, I have to go help out with my kids for a little bit, so I'll see you later. To guys in a while.
All right, cheers, Joe. Yeah, work sometimes plays a part in the OS that you have to run, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Go on.
Sorry, I'm just going to change the subject if there isn't anything else in that topic.
No, I was just going to say, we were having a conversation. I can't remember where it was. I think it might have been when we were recording Mintcast the other night or it might have been some feedback or something from Mintcast about what OS is, whether you can get away. No, I think you were having the conversation this morning about whether you can run get away with not running Windows and things like that, weren't you, when we were talking about the Pi?
Yes. Yeah, it was Ken suggesting you can replace your work computer with a Raspberry
Pi. Yeah, with a Pi. That was it. Yeah. No, there's still a lot of places you need to run Windows or whatever operating system that they deem is the company policy. So what was your alternative discussion?
So we talked a little bit about, like, ye olde 8-bit computers, and I wondered how you got, what your first PC was and how you got into the PC world.
The first computer I used was when I went back to college in 1987 and I was doing some computer-aided design stuff, and the lab that we used for it was running an IBM clone 286. So that was when I first started, and that was my first physical use of a computer.
First computer, full stop.
Yeah, that was the first. No, that was the first physical computer I'd ever used.
Do you remember what make they were? Were they like Compaq or something like that?
No,
were they just no name grey boxes?
I think it was RM. Oh, research machines.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
And then in the early 90s, my first wife was doing a degree, and she needed to be able to do some work for producing her college course stuff for a university dissertation and all that kind of stuff. So a friend of mine was really into computers, and he came down to London with a second-hand 386. We bought that off him, and it came with 1 meg of RAM. Wow. So we went up to the Tottenham Court Road and spent £120 and upgraded it to 4 meg of RAM.
Wow.
Are we having fun today, people?
Hello,
Moss. We're just talking, reminiscing about first computers and things. And I'm just telling the story of my the first computer we had in the house, which was a 386, and upgrading it to 4 meg of RAM from 1.
Oh, goodness, you're still a newbie, Tony.
For the vast sum of £120.
Yeah.
And then I went back to university in the late 90s, and I bought a Pentium 2.
Yeah,
a lot of noise there.
Yeah, well, my wife is working in the sink, and I can't stop that. I will mute the mic.
And I got a Pentium 2, and I went to Tottenham Court Road Tiny Computers. There was two, wasn't there? It was Tiny and Time.
Yes.
And right. I went to the Tiny store on Tottenham Court Road. And this, the base model came with 64 meg of RAM. And I went for the upgrade package to 128 meg of RAM. This is a Windows 98. I think it was by then, because it was late 98, so I think they may have upgraded it to second edition by then. I might be wrong. It might have been first edition. But it came with a package. It was kind of a full system. It came with a scanner or, you know, a small printer and stuff like that. All dirt cheap stuff. But the whole system. Oh, and I got Microsoft Office Small Business Edition. So that came with Word, Excel, even came with Publisher. And I got my first ever DVD-ROM with that machine, and it came with two free DVDs, one of which was that Jodie Foster movie about...
Contact.
Contact, yeah, because that had come out a little while before that. And that whole system cost me £1,400. So yowza. It was more than a month's wages. Did it on the drip, or I put it on my credit card or something and paid it off over a period. That's the most I've ever paid for a computer, because gradually, ever since then, they just got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper for far more power.
Did you replace that, or did you just keep upgrading it with, you know, did it become a Frankenstein triggers broom kind of thing?
Well, I upgraded it a little bit, and then in 2003, there was a little computer shop just round the corner from where I was living in the East End of London, which was literally 5 minutes walk from where I live. And I went in there one day and said, this, you know, by then Pentium 4s had come out. And I said, I want a Pentium 4 box build, just the tower, because I still had the screen and all the other stuff with it. So I had a Pentium 4 box built specially for me. Came in a lovely aluminium case, actually. I got rid of that PC for some reason, and that case was gorgeous. and that cost me £700. And I think that had a gig of RAM. It was either 512 or a gig, I can't remember, but it was DDR by then.
It's amazing to think that, like, when we were talking this morning about the Raspberry Pi, how Raspberry Pi is more powerful than that, and it's
like 30
quid or something like that, when you think how much we had to pay for what that was. But, you know, at the time, every generation, like my son's PC, I mean, admittedly, it's a hand-me-down PC that I gave him, but he's playing modern games at 1080p resolution connected to a super fast internet connection. And, you know, when you think of what we had to go through back in the day.
Well, when I got my first internet connection back in 98, when I got that to Pentium 2, of course, it came with the massive 56K modem installed in the PCI card. And that was, you know, compared with now, that it used to take you about a day to download an MP3 file. I'm probably exaggerating a bit, but it was very slow.
And there weren't very many MP3 files back then either.
No, you used to have to find some dodgy website to download them.
So I recently went through a, you know, those zip closing bags that you put CDs and CDRs in, that, you know, they've got slips in them that you put, you know, you bring your CDs.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I've got a couple of them here actually.
And I went through one of those that had CDs from the past that I burned, and some of them were backups that I'd made in 1997, and I had to dig out a CD-ROM drive, USB CD-ROM drive, plugged it in, and had a rummage through some of the stuff that's on here. And sure enough, there was a folder called MP3, and in it were songs. I have no idea where I got hold of these songs from, but somewhere online probably, or a BBS or something. But they were super low quality, super low bit rate, but they were the only like dozen songs I had back at the time. So I just used to listen to them on a loop. It's terrible.
Yeah. And this Christmas, I just got as a Christmas present a 4-bay IC dock for 2.5-inch drives.
Oh, yeah.
Which will go in. And I remember getting a 120. Do you remember the, you could get zip drives, and you could get, there was another one. I can't remember the title of it, but I got the other one, not the zip, the other one.
Made by the same company, Iomega. Was it Jazz? I think it was the Jazz drive.
It might have been the Jazz drive, but I remember getting one of them with a 120 meg drive thing to install, and that seemed massive. That was before I got a CD writer. Yeah, but you know, now I could stick a 1 terabyte drive into one of those bays and just swap that out as many times as I wanted.
Joe, it boggles my mind. I've got in my hand a SanDisk Ultra micro SD card, and the one I've got in my hand is a 32 gig. Sam's got a Nintendo Switch, my son. And one of the things he asked for Christmas was more storage, because he's running out, because he downloads games and got his saves and all that kind of stuff. And he had this 32 gig SD card in his Nintendo Switch, and he asked for something bigger. And I went on Amazon and just bought a 128 gig card for a tenner. It was like 10 or 12 pounds. And I used, put both cards in my laptop and just dragged and dropped the Nintendo folder from one to the other, and then that's all you have to do, and then put the 128 gig drive in his Switch, and that's it, he's away. 128 gig, that's an insane amount of storage. Well, that fits on your fingernail, like, it's insane.
Didn't Bill Gates say nobody would ever need more than 1 meg of RAM?
Well, unfortunately, I think it was misattributed. I don't think he actually. I think it was nobody would ever need more than 640K of RAM, and he claims he never actually said it. So, who knows?
Well, my mobile phone.
We need to find the tape.
My mobile phone's got 32 gig of internal storage, and I've got a 64 gig micro SD card in it, but it'll support 128.
When I think back to, like, those, the Spectrum and the Commodore, I went in the loft recently, and while I was up there, I found a bunch of old cassettes that I used to have on the Spectrum. And some of them were pre-recorded, like games you buy in a shop. And some of them were things that me and my friends had written, like software we'd written in BASIC and a Z80 assembler, and saved onto Deeps.
Yeah.
And I don't have a cassette deck. So I had to go and buy a cassette deck, And plug it into my laptop and use Audacity to sample the game off of a tape and then inject that into an emulator. And it was like, these are tapes that haven't touched a cassette deck since 1987, something like that.
I was going to say 86, 87.
At a push, 1990, maybe. And I just put them in a cassette deck and played them, and they sound all over the place. They're like the wow and flutter. They're wobbling everywhere. But it sampled them, and I played them into an emulator, and I was playing that I'd written 30 years ago.
But that just, it's amazing that Audacity is able to copy that and then use that audio file to emulate that tape. That is, it's just mind-boggling, really.
Yeah,
you could actually do it.
But it's only because, like, when you think about those systems that had, like, everything was offline. There was no such thing as online. And all my cassettes still work. Like, these cassettes that I have lined up on my desk, I could put them into a cassette deck and load them into a Spectrum or whatever 8-bit computer from the past. Whereas my son will be playing games on the Nintendo Switch, and in 30 years' time, I can pretty much guarantee there is no way he'll be able to play them anymore, because they require an online authentication or an online component, or the SD card will fail and he'll have to re-download the software, which he won't be able to do because the servers will be offline. So it's very sad. I'm delighted that I can go back and relive my youth, reloading these tapes and playing through them. He won't be able to do that in 30 years'
time. Technology just will supersede it, and there won't be the backwards compatibility like there is.
Right.
Yeah, I see all the science fiction movies where they find this document sitting around in some sort of disk form, and they just pop it into their computer and it works. And I'm going, huh? We can't even get Macs to talk to PCs, you know?
Yeah, it don't work like that.
Or like Independence Day, where they just invade the alien computer with an iPad, yeah, or iMac. Yeah.
But you're talking about a 32 gig micro SD card and 120, and you can get 512 ones now.
That's insane.
I know. And that first 386, I think if the hard drive was 100 meg, that would have been big back in the day.
And Alan, you are quite right that Bill Gates claims to have never made that comment. However, there's a worse comment made by Dex Ken Olson. There is no reason for any individual to have a computer in his home.
Oh, I remember that one. And that, isn't there one about
this? He says it was out of context. He's referring to basically IoT. So he's still wrong.
Ken's just popped in and said, would we wish the next lot of Happy New Years at 6 o'clock?
Well, I can't wait for this year to get over.
Yeah, it's going to be at 1800 UTC, which is coming up in about 7 minutes. It will be Bangladesh and several other places.
Mm.
We would like to jump on because we're going down to visit some family. So we'd like to come on and do the traditional Colin family wishing everybody Happy New Year.
I'm going to have to go, guys. I'll be back.
See you later.
Sure. All right, Tony. See you.
Can you hear me? My supper's just
arrived.
Yes,
we can hear you, Ken.
See you, Tony. Go.
Happy New Year!
Okay.
Yay.
Nearly.
Nearly. All right. We'll see you next year then when we come back. Bye.
See you later. Bye. See you later, Fallon family.
Yeah, I can't wait this year to get over. It's been one of my worst financially, but one of my best in so many other areas. Getting involved in Mintcast has done my life a world of good. It just hasn't gotten me any more money than I had. Well, not significant amounts. I've been trying to explain to people that they go, well, what's your career path? And I go, from the time I was 12, I was being misdiagnosed and drugged, and there was no career because they thought I was insane. They could have been right, but not the kind of insane they were drugging me for. So here I am, 67 years old, and still managing to carry on a conversation and Everyone's saying, well, how come you can't get better than $9 an hour job? Yeah.
Yeah, that must be difficult.
It is. I appreciate that. I had a fun time today. I managed to get the new version of Farron OS installed on my Kudu, and I couldn't get it installed on my Galago Pro.
Is this the problem you're having booting it?
No, I got that fixed. I got that all fixed. It's but I stick in the USB jump drive in either of two USB ports on the Galago Pro. I boot to it correctly, and it comes up, and everything looks fine, and I start typing anything, and my keyboard's all wrong.
What, wrong layout?
And I have it set for US keyboard. It's not a layout thing. When I'm hitting a D and getting in a 6, there's a problem.
Oh, that would be a challenge.
Yes, it continues to be. I haven't figured it out yet. I've tried both USB ports, and I might just have a... I can't imagine getting the stick messed up after I just installed it properly on another computer with that stick.
So when you boot the stick, the very, very first thing you see, do you get like a menu, like a traditional boot menu that asks you if you want to try or install? Is that, I don't know, I haven't seen the Farron installer.
Yeah, when it comes up and it basically has the full, first, it comes up with, of course, the boot menu saying, do you want to boot from this disk, that partition, that partition, that partition, or the USB stick? And I select the USB stick, and then it comes up with two selections of Farron. And I select to go ahead with Farron, and then after a while, since it's KDE, it takes a while to load the desktop. I'm amazed. KDE is such a light desktop, but it takes longer than any other to load.
Huh, I haven't noticed that. I was running it for 18 months on this laptop, and I found it pretty speedy.
Well, right now on Galago Pro, I have 10 distros, and had Q4S, and eventually that I noticed the slowness with that one, and I could not get any good answers, so I put the version of Neon on. It's not fast. It's a little Q4S was, and then I was playing with Farron OS on the Kudu, and I said, well, let's get it over here. But anyhow, everything I have with KDE, it runs at about 573 megs of RAM, which is light for a full desktop, but it does take longer to load.
Interesting. I wonder if that's a virtue of it being a USB 2 instead of USB 3. That may be a reason why it's slower to load.
I don't know about it. I know I'm USB 3. I mean, when it's installed, I can give you the time. I can give you the times of my boots, and the KDE is always the slowest.
How strange.
But then when it loads, it runs. One of the things Q4OS told me was, well, it's just KDE. They always load slowly. Anyhow, blah, blah. How are things on that side of the pond, Alan?
Not bad. Well, actually, awful.
I was putting on yet?
Oh God, that's the worst part of it. No, I'm gonna.
You've got Boris. We've got orange tangerine face guy.
Yeah, I think I what I need to do is start 2020 the way I would like 2020 to be, which is start positive. So I think, given that in this country we've got 6 hours left before the end of the year, I'm going to refrain from talking about politics or thinking about politics, I think, for the next 6 hours, to get myself in the right frame of mind to launch into a new year, which, like you say, I hope is more positive than the last one.
Yeah. Well, I have enjoyed listening to the Ubuntu podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Anything else you're on? You're too stupid or extra worthless.
I need to pop off and go and check on the dinner, so I may be back a little bit later.
Okay, Alan.
Later. I'll see you later.
Bye. Anybody else here, or am I talking to myself?
I just jumped in. So, what's up?
Hi.
I'm here-ish.
Hi, Joe. I just talked to you a couple days ago, didn't I?
Hey, Moss.
Is that Taj or Ty?
It's Taj.
Taj, okay.
Like the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, you're off, except I haven't seen an H in that one, but that's okay. I'm too picky about things. I'm sorry. Call myself, but I am not a Nazi in any form.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Got to be a better term. So where are you, Taj?
I am currently in southern Indiana, like right on the border between Indiana and Kentucky.
Aha. Uh-huh. Couple hours north of me, then. I'm out in the boonies outside of Knoxville.
Ah, yeah, that's not too far away.
And our friend Joe is in Texas somewhere.
Yeah, El Paso.
That's somewhere in Texas.
I mean, that's generally like saying somewhere on Earth, since Texas is so big. I mean,
so I don't know you, Taj. Tell me something.
Okay, what do you want to know?
What do you do? Or I know you're in southern Indiana.
I my day job is I work for a university. I am a director for a program that goes into underserved schools, and we do college and career readiness with a STEM focus. So I basically go in and teach a lot of engineering and math and programming stuff in a couple high schools in our area.
That's cool.
It can be.
What do you do on the side?
Lots of hacky things. I do a podcast with a couple guys from Hacker Public Radio called You Random, and we do that once a month.
I need to pick up on that. I haven't paid much attention to HPR, even though they kindly hosted Mintcast for a very long time and still have it available.
Yeah, HPR is pretty much the best thing on the planet.
And for that matter, they rebroadcast the first episode of a newer Distro Hopper's Dive. We got maybe 1,300 or more listens on the HPR. We haven't hit 500 on our own downloads.
I mean, that is like a secret marketing ploy, is to just get HPR to pick up your first episode, and you're automatically going to get a bunch of listeners.
Well, let's see. We've got two episodes that are approaching 500 downloads. But we're doing it. We weren't expecting more than 100, even with HPR's help. And it seems to be growing the speed of a snail.
we always joke that we have no concept of how many people listen to the show. So, like, we look at numbers, and they're vastly different in different places. So we're just like, yeah, there's three people listening, and that's fine. And it's three people on the show. So, you know, if anybody else listens, I'm sorry. I apologize for everything that's happened on the show. I denounce my co-hosts and all of their opinions.
What show is it?
You Random.
You say it's about monthly on HPR?
It's not on HPR. All met through HPR. There used to be a audiobook club that was done monthly. And so I was a regular on that. And then Pokey, he used to be a lot more involved with HPR than he is these days, but he was on there.
5150
was on there a couple, one time. And then Lyle, who's another HPR contributor. And then we figured out that when we were doing the audiobook club that we spent half the time cutting out just us being random. So we're like, let's just turn that into a show. And so we do that now. And it drops on the first of the month. So tomorrow there will be a new episode.
Yeah, every now and again, Joe and I tend to be making Mintcast into a book club.
Discuss audiobooks and books.
Yeah, I don't do audiobooks yet. I am the audiobook.
Audiobooks work best for me just because I spend so much time in the car. And if it's not podcast, it's audiobooks. So I find I can get through a lot of stuff in audiobook form. And then when I sit down to read, it's usually work. It's research stuff. So that's not pleasurable in any way. So it's kind of hard to get in that headspace.
I've been reading two people for a number of years. Just anyone that wants to have me call them up and read them a chapter, I do. I haven't been very early, but then I got married 3 years ago to like read to her. First year or so, she just fell asleep while I was reading. Fortunately, she's not listening to me.
What was that, Joe? I could barely hear you.
What's your favorite audiobook, Taj?
Oh, probably of all time. This is going to be hard. So the deal with the audiobook club is that everything had to be either public domain or it had to be under a freely available license. So I read other things, but that's kind of what the audiobook club was. From those, I mean, I have to go with somebody who I fell in love with as an author who is now my friend, David Collins Rivera. His book Street Candles blew my mind. And now I can, you know, he goes by Lost in Bronx on here, but I can personally call him a friend, which I think is kind of cool. But I fell in love with his work first. So, but I like him, Nathan Lowell stuff. I'm trying to, who is the guy that, I want to say Matthew Williams. He did a couple books in a series called Tincture, which is really good. Yeah, stuff like that.
Cool. When it comes to my favorites, I usually have to go with either Ender's Game or Ready Player One, just for how well it was done.
Ender's Game is awesome. It was one of my favorite books growing up, for sure. I have not read the book Ready Player One. I'll be honest, I watched the movie and was bored, and then for like 2 minutes I was happy because Gundam was on the screen in live action, and then after that went away, I was bored again. So I don't know that it's my shtick.
Well, the book is actually better than the movie, but the premise is pretty much the same. So if you're really into 80s nostalgia, then yeah, Ready Player One's good.
Yeah, it seemed very like video game heavy, and I'm just not a gamer. So even when I was a kid, I wasn't a gamer. So I think a lot of the references and stuff just kind of went over my head. I was like, wow, there's just lots of colors flashing in front of me quickly, and I didn't get it. So maybe the book would be better. I should probably take some time and read it.
Yeah, with the book, you get a lot more movies and TV shows along with video games.
Yeah, that's probably more my speed.
It's growing up, though. It really is.
Plus, the audiobook has Will Wheaton as the reader, and he actually references himself.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's weird. I just crashed out of the server. Am I back?
You are back. Honky, you are lighting up, but there's no sound coming out.
Yeah, nothing, Honky.
That is really disturbing when I crash out of the server for no good reason.
Yeah, that's a little odd. Mumble tends to be pretty stable.
Have you ever read any Daniel Suarez?
No, his name keeps coming up. I think, didn't he write Damon? And I think there's another book in that series.
Freedom.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've never actually read it, though.
Change Agent is pretty good, too. I haven't yet read, Kill Decision, which is about drones. But I do plan to one of these days.
Well, one of my favorite authors whom I am personally acquainted with is Tim Marquitz. He's got an exceptional series called Demon Squad that just... it's been compared very favorably to Dresden Files sometimes. Jim Butcher tends to love the series and keeps writing little comments for the blurbs for the covers and whatnot.
Demon Squad was pretty good. How are you liking the first book from the Dresden Files?
As I said, it's growing on us. We're getting into it pretty well now. We've gotten right to the chapter where the girl that was supposed to be coming to with the sultry voice was coming to meet him, and then she turns out dead.
Okay.
Yep.
So the shoe hasn't quite dropped yet.
No, the shoe hasn't dropped yet, but boy, the council really has it in for him. We don't like having non-dispassionate people in charge of, like, probation officer. You know, when you're sure that the guy that you're watching is a guy and get the goods away for good, that's not the best position for a probation officer to be in.
I might have to switch devices because I got about one word and three on that one.
Oh, boy. Sorry about that. Well, we need to get going. We've got some shopping to do, but Tony wanted me to drop in and say hi, so I did.
All right, and thank you for that.
Oh, and Tony's back.
Yeah, I've just finished my supper.
Well, we've got to go get some grocery shopping done, a large portion of which needs to be kitty litter. But
yeah, of course, it's a... What is it, 1 p.m. your time, just after?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. We'll have a
anyhow, Joe, I'll talk to you some other time about where we're at with Dresden.
He's not there. Oh, right, you are there.
I'm on my phone, but my Bluetooth is about to die, so...
Right.
Okay, we'll see you guys later. Nice talking to you, Todd. I hope we get some time to do that again.
Yeah, for sure. Nice to meet you, man.
Take it easy, everyone.
Okay, cheers, Moss.
Can anybody hear me?
No, so, but I...
Yeah. Nah, I can't hear you, Honky. Yeah.
What's up, Netminer?
Oh, it was Netminer. Sorry, Honky. I thought it was you that had spoken.
Well, I just came on and I was a little worried that I wasn't getting through.
Nope, we can hear you. Unlike Honky, who keeps keying up and nothing comes through.
Hi, Tosh.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. I don't think we've spoken before.
I don't believe so.
So I take it you're also across the pond?
Yep. I'm in the U.S.
Yeah, whereabouts?
I'm right on the border between Indiana and Kentucky, so pretty much center of the country.
Okay. I'm on the west coast of the UK in a small town called Blackpool.
I'm in the...
Netminer, you dropped out. We got like the first three syllables of what you said.
Looks like he's having audio problems.
I'm in the Boston area.
Yeah.
That late diagnosis thing, or the wrong diagnosis, reminded me... It took over 40 years for them to discover that I have Asperger's syndrome. A friend of mine, when I was a late teenager, said, "Your body language is very odd. You can't be transmitting what your body language says." And in 2003... I discovered that I had a form of autism called Asperger's syndrome.
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
In my 40s.
Right. Yeah, it's quite difficult when you get an adult diagnosis like that. Although, in some ways, it can be quite comforting. I got diagnosed in my late 40s, early 50s as being having dyspraxia. And once I got the diagnosis, it explained so many things from... through my life.
Yeah, it does help. Also, if I hadn't gone on disability, when my mother went into the nursing home, they would have taken the house and I'd be on the street, so things worked out.
Yeah. Sometimes these things help and sometimes they don't, but it's probably better to know than not.
Well, I've met some people through the system, and you run into other types of autism and family members of autistics, and it can be quite comforting.
Do you take part in some of the support groups and support channels?
Yeah, I follow some of the support channels, and I've been able to pass on something to someone who's got a nonverbal autistic son on YouTube, pass on a link helpful about the holidays.
Mm.
Funny thing is, this fella is nonverbal, and because of my version of autism, I'm very... logic and verbal focused. My nonverbal detection system is completely offline.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that.
Also, I just ended treatment because I was finding that my therapist was more interested in proving that her therapy system was perfection itself instead of listening to the patient.
Yeah, we. I spent 25 years in health and social care as a professional. I'm a qualified mental health nurse and social worker, and we started changing our approach to working with people, particularly with mental health problems, a few years ago, and in physical health problems, where the patient is the expert. So that they can tell you what works for them rather than the therapist or the health professional trying to say
this works and you've got to do this?
Well, my therapist was a very nice lady, but some of the signals were she was thoroughly liberal, which is not a good match for me. And she had gotten her PhD without going through a master's program, which seems to signal me that she had to be more orthodox than the Pope.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a bit of an odd duck. I was raised as a 50s kid in the 60s. My folks were more comfortable with 50s ethics, small town USA, black and white TV, you know, leave it to Beaver shit. which is a little strange if you're going with kids with long hair and t-shirts and jeans and sneakers when you're in your sports shirt, slacks, and polished shoes. Also, I learned early that you could do your own thing as long as it looked pretty much like the own thing of the guy on the left and the guy on the right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm I consider myself a refugee from the small towns where my folks came from.
Right. So you, what kind of age are you? 60s?
Yeah, early 60s.
Yeah, same as me. I was born late 58.
Spring of 58 for me.
Oh, right.
Now, one of the disconnects that I had was that as someone from my background, I have a very strong Second Amendment views. And my counselor as a logic test wanted me to justify the Orlando attack.
Not very well up on the various amendments to the U.S. Constitution, so you might have to enlighten me.
Second Amendment is keep and bear arms.
Ah, right, okay.
Well, seems like the people who wrote the Constitution felt that the government might stop listening to paper ballots. But a lead ballot tends to have an impact, if you know what I mean.
It does. We may have different views on that, because I'm a Quaker, if you know anything about them.
Actually, I am. And as an aside, I went down when I was younger to Philadelphia, which is originally a Quaker settlement.
Oh, yes.
And I saw the USS Olympia, which is a late 19th century warship. And I saw that they'd replaced the main armament with a couple of telephone poles. And I said, well, that's natural. They're in Philadelphia, a Quaker city, and they replaced the prime armament on this warship with Quaker guns.
That sounds cool.
You know, I would, you know, she would say, why should someone have this kind of gun? And I said, there's a lot of legal ways to use a gun. And I said, instead of too many semi-automatics in the club, there should have been somebody doing security who could have stopped this guy. The guy had such free rein because there was nobody else armed. Also, in America, they know when they tighten up the firearms laws, the crime rate goes up.
Yeah, I don't know much about American crime statistics. So,
well, the places that have the tightest arms that prove to the crooks that they're going to deal with a disarmed populace have the highest crime rate. Chicago, New York, Baltimore, Core City.
Yeah, because there's parts of America where it's perfectly legal to carry a firearm, even in open view, isn't it?
Well, there is, and if you're going to break into a house in Texas and liable get your ass full of shotgun,
yeah, buckshot,
or you're going to break into a house in New York and know that the homeowner is not allowed to protect himself. But the interesting thing of that logic test was after a while I would answer a bunch of questions about legal uses of firearms, and she'd keep pushing. And when I asked her to stop because it was getting to be painfully clear we weren't getting anywhere and I was getting emotionally overwrought, she considered that time to do further experimentation. Well, that reawoke my PTSD, which I had gotten from similar interrogations over the dinner table. Non-military PTSD.
Right.
And she wouldn't... I asked for time out, anything that I could, but she wouldn't stop.
Mm.
Now, my PTSD... The nice guy goes away, and I have a very reactive protective system that is very logical. Think of an evil Spock, if you want. And it took her 6 months to understand that she was triggering my PTSD.
That's not good.
Well, when the mode that I call surviving veteran comes up, basically Inglourious Bastards verbal division, that's not a place I want to be.
Mm.
Also, because things were so impossible in session, I actually physically collapsed because I tried to shut myself down so I wouldn't be... It just got too nasty going to sessions.
Right.
And since I asked for help and spent 13 years asking for help and didn't get much, except whatever you say is a distortion or is inaccurate, is... I said, thank you very much, but I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. Just 2 seconds. Can we wish our listeners in India and parts of India and Sri Lanka Happy New Year? New Delhi, Mumbai, Kolkata, Bangalore. It's just gone over your midnight.
Well, Happy New Year to all of those many people and many cultures.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your understanding. I tend to get tripped on this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's all right. Like I say, I spent 20-odd years as a mental health nurse, so I've had my own personal mental health issues over the years, before I started my own training and went into the field. So I've got some insight into, you know, various things. Around mental health and, you know, disabilities and things. The one thing is, everyone's different. You know, you can never say that you understand exactly, just because you've got a personal problem yourself, you can never say you understand the person like yourself. You're talking to me now. I can't understand what your experience is because I've not lived it. Because your experience, even if we had the same condition, would be totally different.
Well, yes, Asperger syndrome is considered an obsolete term. They changed the book. However, my condition didn't seem to change when they put out the new edition.
Yeah, they just call it part of the autistic spectrum these days. Yeah, and we're all on that spectrum at some point. That's what a lot of people don't really understand.
Yeah, well, back in the day, I would explain that I'm like Commander Data.
Yeah.
And back on another topic, back in the day, my first Linux machine was a 16 megabyte 386 SX40. It was a snail, but it was a racing snail.
I can beat you. My first machine was a 1 meg 386 that I upgraded to 4 meg. And that was a dog.
My first machine, which died through power failure or bad power, was a CPM machine with two 400K floppies and 64K of RAM.
Wow.
When I built my first DOS machine, it was a PC clone, and the big disk was a one point four meg floppy, and I had something like a 2 meg EMS card in there for speed.
Yeah, I remember in the early 90s, I was in worked in a detox unit and as a clinician, and we were allowed to go into the admin office when we were on night duty and use the computer in there, which would have been a 386 or a 486. With the 3.5-inch floppy drives, and we weren't allowed to save anything to the hard drive on the machine. We had to use floppy drives to save any of our work, because otherwise we'd have clogged up the machine, because it probably only had about 150 meg of hard drive space.
My first experience of Unix was at MIT. PDP 1145 with an 80 meg hard drive about the size of a small hassock.
Yeah.
And they had night TVs. Well, if you think of a multi... you had your individual keyboard and an individual black and white or green screen. So it was like the entire video system was running on something like a multi-headed Hercules.
Right. That's gone right over my head, that has. Because, like I say, that was way before I really got interested in the technology behind all this stuff.
Well, Hercules was PC graphics, but they did graphics on a black and white screen.
Yeah, right.
In lieu of the IBMs, where you had the good video but text only, or you had colors and lower resolutions.
Mm.
So Hercules was one of the first ones where you got WYSIWYG in your WordStar or WordPerfect or whatever.
Right, yeah. I remember first hearing that term, WYSIWYG, and thinking, what the... Are they going on about? And then it started to make sense in the end.
Well, they had screensavers if nobody was logged in, but they had to revise them, because this was at MIT, a college with a lot of male nerds. And the scanned images were not exactly safe for work.
Mm.
Although, also, when I went over to the AI lab and saw one of their fancy 8086 systems that they'd hand-wired lovingly and may have had a couple of megs of memory or whatever, they also had a rather mature video to show off their big screen.
That's a nice euphemism. Mature video, that's good.
Well, it was an early MIT had its own version of Ethernet called ChaosNet, and back when I had an account there, I actually had internet access first time through the MIT system. By the way, I still have a Pentium 1 with 32 megabytes of RAM.
Oh, my old Pentiums have gone years ago.
Well, I have that, a P4 and a XP era Celeron hanging around. The P1 I keep for running FreeDOS, which is the open source DOS clone.
Yeah.
When I pick up the project again, I'm going to try to get it networked to the rest of my machines, though it may be networked through a secondary Ethernet port and not really networked to, or not often open to the rest of the network. Rest of the internet.
Right. As Ken would say, there's a show in that.
Well, my first storage medium for computer programs was teletype paper tape.
Wow.
And have you ever seen the data, the tape cartridges about the size of a cassette for computer?
Yes. Yeah.
I worked on a 16-bit PDP-11 micro that had a couple of those for in lieu of floppy storage. They were about a quarter megabyte.
Right. Well, they actually still use tape backup in a job that I was in 2012. We had a computer system. I was working in healthcare in the prison system in the UK here, and to back up all our database for the healthcare part that I was working in, we had a tape recorder that you could swap out once a day, so that you were only 24 hours, that if you did need to do a system restore, you could put in the tape from the day before and get your system back up and running. And that was a tape backup. But obviously, capacity-wise, it was probably a bit more than quarter of a meg or whatever.
Well, the interesting thing is that this used a microcomputer as the brains of the tape unit.
Mm.
Also, it was block replaceable, which is to say it behaved like a floppy. It didn't behave like a tape drive. But then again, your seek times could be go out for coffee. But the real kicker was the link between the tape unit and your mini computer was 38.4 kilobaud serial.
Right.
It redefines slow.
Yeah, I should imagine it does.
I mean, it made a 56K baud modem look like, you know, hot stuff.
Yeah, I remember the old printer cables with the massive great big serial connector on the end of for the computer and for the printer, and they were massive.
Yeah, I still have a dot matrix printer with the old Centronics parallel cable, which is a little different shape, but same pinout at one end.
Yeah. How computing has changed over the last 20 years, eh? Or even longer?
Oh, yeah, I was on dial-up for way too long, but but when XP was around, you could support it over dial-up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was, I think the early part of when I was running XP back in 2002, 2003, I had predecessor to ADSL, where you got two phone lines and used that. So instead of getting 56K, you had 128K connection. And then I went to ADSL and got a massive 512.
Yeah, I've got the world's largest collection of 56K modems.
Yeah. Again, they've all been consigned to the Ethernet in the sky from my end.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the things that's on my to-do list down the road is to put in some kind of server here. Since I'm basically Ubuntu or derivatives based, I'd like to build an upgrade server with a Raspberry Pi or something so that when my systems do their upgrades, they don't have to go out to the DSL. They just go out to the local copy.
Okay.
Because when I upgrade, you know, I've got two or three machines here, and whenever they do an update, they all have to go out to the out through the DSL.
Hmm. So you are you still on what do you call it, over the telephone for your internet, or are you on cable, you know, fiber optic?
Oh, fiber is not here, and cable around here is Comcast or Xfinity, and it's arm and leg up to the knee.
Mm.
Also, it has a volume cap, although I don't know if I'd ever touch it.
Oh, I'm on a service that doesn't have any volume cap, so quite lucky with that.
Yeah, well, I'm on... Yeah, DSL doesn't have a volume cap. They just know that you can't haul down the big stuff just like someone with fiber or coax can.
Yeah, it just takes a lot longer, so you're not actually chewing through that much data because it takes longer to do it. Yeah, it's amazing. I downloaded ISO of the Ubuntu Studio the other day to have a play with that, and I think it took me about 12 minutes to download 3.5 gig, and I could, that would have taken weeks back in the day.
Yep. Probably hanging on dial-up is why I am more into still images than videos. Also, you know, I just haven't had, I'm not addicted to, well, I'm addicted to YouTube stuff, but that's a little different.
Do you get that over your mobile phone?
What mobile phone?
Yeah, cellular network.
No. This is DSL over copper.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're still using your main PC to access YouTube then?
Oh, I have, yeah. Well, I'm using individual PCs to access YouTube.
Right.
I have a tablet that I want to work with, but that's one of the other projects, getting Android to talk to Ethernet or talk to my other machines via USB without using Wi-Fi.
Right. So have you not got a Wi-Fi network at home then?
No, it's all hardwired.
Right.
Living on my own, I've been able to spin network cables through various openings and door frames wherever I need to go.
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't, for me, it wouldn't work because both me and the wife have both got cell phones, and, you know, connecting them hardwired is... virtually impossible. I'm not saying it isn't possible, but because you can use tethering and things like that, wired tethering, but it's just a lot more convenient to have a Wi-Fi network.
Oh, I understand that, but the security questions about Wi-Fi just have kept me gun-shy of it. I'm also not on social media for similar reasons.
Mm, yeah, I must admit I'm a bit of a social media freak. I've got so many different social media channels set up. It's unbelievable. But that's partly because I use some of them for the podcast that I'm on.
Oh, I understand that for someone who's got a presence out there that's active or is actually producing material. That's one reason why I keep myself to strictly secondary roles on the one podcast that I'm a member of.
Yeah. Is it Lugcast or TD to the other one that you're on?
Yeah, I'm on Lugcast as well.
Lugcast with Joe.
And Honky.
Yeah.
Is there a chance anybody can hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, there he is.
Who's that?
So I had a pair of headphones on that apparently had a microphone attached to it or something. I don't think the microphone works on that. So now I'm sitting in my car waiting for it to get registered, and I'm over Bluetooth.
Yeah, you're on your Honky Mobile connection. I can see it. Yeah.
Yep.
Excuse me just for a couple of seconds. I've just had a message on eBay that I'm just typing a reply to.
Hey, Netminer. Hey, Joe. Long time no talk.
Hey, Honky. What's up?
Not much. Just killing time while sitting here waiting for... I'm in line to get a car inspected, so...
Always fun.
Oh, yeah. Apparently everybody likes to wait till the last day of the month to go get their car inspected. Myself included, I guess.
So is that the American equivalent to what we call our MOT? Is it a safety check that you have to have done?
Well, it's state by state on whether or not they have to have the inspection, but it's safety and emissions.
So do you have to have it done once a year?
Yeah. Well, like I said, depending on the state.
Yeah. Yeah, once a vehicle's 3 years old in this country, you have to have an annual safety and an emissions check.
I think your first check lasts 2 years, and then you have to do it every year after that.
Right.
At least in Texas, anyway.
Yeah. You get when you buy a brand new car, you get 3 years, and then at the end of the 3 years, you've got to do this annual safety check and emissions.
Yeah. Well, it's a big... Annual inspections around here, I'm in Massachusetts, are a major moneymaker for a lot of repair shops.
Yeah, it's the same here, well, at least in El Paso, and they like to tack on things. Like, you could have gone to Walmart and purchased... windshield wipers and put them on yourself the day before the inspection. But on the day of inspection, they're going to say that you need new windshield wipers.
That's a bit naughty.
Just a bit.
Yeah, my wife's paranoid about having the check done once a year, so she takes hers to the local council, our local authority. Have got a motor division where they'll do the test, but they don't repair it. So there's no mileage in them saying it's faulty or not faulty because they don't get any of the repair work. She always takes it there to get her test done, and then takes it back to the dealers to get the work done if there's anything needs doing.
Well, this guy's known for piling on. You ask him to fix something that needs fixing, and he will replace everything that looks like it's more than, you know, a year old. then you get this enormous bill, and he says, "By the way, if you don't pay up now, I'll tack on storage fees."
Ooh, that's nasty.
Well, this guy is a reasonably nasty guy. He fenced. There's been a lot of. There's a segment of my property by the stream bank, which my family's been using for 50 years, but he decided, well, it's attached to his deed, so he fenced right up the middle of my driveway.
Ooh.
Now, my other option was to give him as much of my backyard as he wanted, which I might have done if there was negotiations, but his idea of as much of my backyard is as much he would not give me access to the rear of my property. Again, he wanted to take his slice out of the middle. By the way, there was no talk of paying me or compensating me for the additional property he was going to use. It was just, I'm your neighbor. I have this parking lot. I want to expand it. You have flat ground. I can just run a fence behind your house with no necessary clearance, so you can't get back to your the backside of your property, but I would have what I want.
Hmm. And the law's got no recompense with that?
Well,
just costs too much for the legal bills.
Well, I finally had him fence the boundary, which was based on 1917 boundaries, and a lot of land had been filled since then. Also, my septic system came into question because it was just across the line onto his property, and he wanted it out of there. It had been previously grandfathered because it wasn't polluting or anything, but now that he and his friends at Town Hall discovered it wasn't meeting current standards. Eventually, I'll have to hook up to sewerage and pay fees for something that's taken care of naturally and has been for the last 50 years. But I understand he has very friendly relations with people in the town hall. Very special rates if they need repairs or expensive parts.
Right. Friends in high places, as we call it.
Yeah, well, you know. My lawyer, who I engaged, said that his lawyer was a shark. So there was no dealing through there. And the only time that I got a map of what he wanted to take of my property was through my lawyer. He, of course, would not inform me because I was just the person who had the property that he wanted to acquire.
Yeah.
Now, he would trade the stream bank and the stream for my back garden.
That's not quite the same, though, is it? You can't exactly put a patio on a stream.
Well, it makes parking difficult.
Yeah.
So now the boundary going up the former edge of the stream from 100 years ago means there's a fence up my driveway. The one saving grace is that my town is supposed to replace the bridge that was near my property. And their project is slipping about a year per year. So as far as I'm concerned, they can replace that bridge when I'm 75 or 85 with my blessing. Because I'm on a fixed income and I don't want to have to pay for sewerage on top of my taxes and everything until I have to.
Mm.
Now, I'm depressed and I find the holiday season depressing, but the fact that the town is not replacing the bridge in any kind of, seems to not to be replacing it in any kind of hurry, I find quite comforting.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I've got decent neighbours, but I also don't have much land for people to try and steal off me.
Well, this gentleman, to abuse that term quite heavily, is supposed to take a corner of what used to be my property and have a settling pond for runoff from his parking area. Now, he has used the corner that he has been able to reclaim. Again, I'm abusing the term, but
yeah,
as a parking area for his vehicles, there is no sign of a settling pond being installed. And with the differential enforcement, shall we say, I will be surprised if the mandated plan for him to have a settling pond for the parking lot that he already has appears.
Mm.
And since he's a business and I'm a homeowner, the balance of forces is a little adverse on my side.
Yeah.
However, I do have a good neighbor, and I may suggest to them that they expand their parking area into my front garden. For one thing, you would add a parking space or two to their situation. It would give me an area that I could use in the rare occasion that I need a driveway. And coincidentally, if they plow our combined property, the logical end of that plow run is against my other abutter's fence. Now, it would be terrible if when they're plowing their property that something happened to his offensive fence. But I would write into the agreement that I'm not responsible for any damage to the abutting fence.
Right.
And if one business wants to disagree with another, I'm perfectly fine with people with deep pockets fighting each other. And I'll just step out of the way. Also, the gentleman who went fence mad also fenced a large amount of the boundaries outside his business area, a large part of what was my boundaries, just to make certain that I didn't have access to anything that wasn't actually my property.
So he blocked off a portion of your property to prevent you from going onto someone else's property?
No, he followed the border, but what I'm saying is the fencing that he put up was not just to secure his property, but to secure mine so that I didn't have a back way across what had been a small patch of woodland.
Mm.
When this guy got upset, he went to extremes to make certain that my boundaries were enforced in the most inconvenient way.
Right.
But then again, I'm going to have to do some research. I'm planning on crowdfunding his wake.
Mm.
With his friendly nature, I'm sure that I may have to rent a large stadium to celebrate that event.
Right, I'm going to go AWOL for about half an hour because I've just realised I've got to go and pick something up. So I shall try and get back on later.
Well, you can't go AWOL. That's absence without leave. You certainly have leave to come and go as you please.
Thank you very much. Okay, guys, I'll talk to you later.
Yep, later.
Talk to you later.
Cheers.
I think I might try and find some food real quick.
Netminer, did you ever make it to one of the MIT yard sales?
Oh, yes. I've gone to the MIT flea many times. Still have some treasures from that. I don't know if they still have them anymore.
Well, that's no good. I know you and I were talking about that a while back. I never made it to one.
Actually, I had some activities in the old Building 20, which was the last temporary World War II building that they tore down just before the turn of the century, where they had their computer club, they had their model railroad, they had a PDP-10. That was an interesting beast to see filling one of the lab bays. And I also saw a couple of IBM tape drives, which were an impressive monument to heavy-duty industrial design. You know, what would be a USB cable was as thick as your arm. And the mini computer stuff that they were actually running was Digital Equipment Corporation. And they talked about the difference between a digital tape drive and the IBM monsters that they had there. The digital drives would be rather lightweight, and if they fell off a truck, you'd just have to sweep them up. With the IBM drives, if they fell off a truck, you'd have to fill the pothole.
What's that?
Digital drives were built okay, but they were built to modern, you know, plastics and and lightweight materials. The IBM drives, which came back from basically the 50s, if they fell off a truck, you'd have to pull them out of the pothole and then fill it. These things were monsters.
Ahoy, me hearties!
Hello.
Is that handsome pirate I hear?
It is a handsome pirate.
Netminer here. What's your handle, sir? Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Pirate.
Ah, yes. The original libertarians.
It's more because I like rum.
I was tickled to find that pirates would often elect their captains. Although I suspect their methods of impeachment were a little more physical than ours.
There's a lot of caveats to saying pirates would elect their captains.
Yes, well, it was all cutthroat politics.
Well, now that I'm within the realm of being a semi-professional mariner, it turns out that people that go to sea for a living don't actually like pirates.
Well, yeah. But then again, reformed pirates, you know, are far more civil than a lot of people.
A lot of professional mariners consider pirates to be terrorists and nothing more. On a related note, people that work in maritime museums also similarly generally dislike pirates because to the general public, any boat with sails is automatically a pirate ship, no matter what it actually is.
Yes. Pirate ships, the assault weapons of the sea.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's like how the media treats guns is how the general public treats pirate ships.
Semi-professional mariner, may I ask what kind of semi-professional work you do? Or are you a charter or fisherman or what?
I am an engineer on a 97-year-old wood passenger steamship.
Shiver me timbers.
Yeah, there's none of that going on.
Well, unless the weather kicks up.
I usually don't care about the weather because I'm in the engine room, so.
And when you say steamship, you're actually meaning real, honest-to-goodness, boiling water steam, right?
Yes, with a 115-year-old triple-expansion steam engine.
Ah, yes, an engine that invented the phrase shake, rattle, and roll.
Not really, not unless it's out of balance.
Well, I'm just... I follow some of the warship channels, and they talk about... if you unleash such a beast at high speed, well, it has a limited time at redline before bad things happen.
Well, the reality of the situation is most steam engines can go faster than what the boiler that's hooked up to them can supply them with steam.
Ah, yes. They're really derated unless they're in, like, military service or something where things get crazy anyway.
Actually, the Navy would derate them even more than civilians would.
For non-nautical people, what is derate?
Run it at less than maximum power output.
Think of it as not only lowering your red line, but adjusting your throttle linkage so you can't get above XRPM or what have you.
Well, like I said, in practical sense, pretty much in every single case, you run out of steam before you hit the point where the it becomes dangerous to run the engine. So the maximum speed for a steam engine is determined by boiler output rather than the engine itself, 99.9% of the time. I mean, I could sit here and take a little like a little Stewart kit steam engine that you can buy online and hook that up to a boiler and run that until it explodes, but that'd be a ridiculous scenario. You know, we have a 800-gallon boiler. You know, if I'm running a 6-inch tall steam engine, you know, that'd be ridiculous.
Yep, my brother's a long haul trucker, and everything that he's got a very powerful system, but everything is governed down to for more long life than the full power that his equipment can actually produce.
As an aside, speaking of a long life, a steam engine will, if properly maintained, and by properly maintained I mean oiled and really that's about it, kept clean and all that, a properly maintained steam engine will last pretty much forever. Like, they don't really wear out.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're the classic example of the tortoise. I mean, takes a licking and keeps on ticking, you know, slow and steady. I mean, I've seen some of the huge London pumping engines that have been running for incredible amounts of time.
Well, the engine I work on has several million miles on it and is, well, there's absolutely no reason why it couldn't be going in another 500 or 600 years. You know, I'm just throwing that number out there, but if at its current state and current maintenance level, it could be. It'll just keep going forever. Hey there, honky.
Evening there, handsome. Well, it's not evening yet, is it? Well, afternoon there, handsome pirate.
Oh, it's still morning for me.
Where are you at? Where it's still morning? I had 2:30 in the afternoon in the Northeast.
Yeah, I moved to Seattle here about 4 years ago.
Nice.
It's starting to look like we're not going to get fireworks tonight because they're calling for lots of wind and rain.
Oh yeah. Now, are you still working on the boat?
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
I forget. Do you live on the boat?
I used to live on a different boat, but not anymore. Now I live in an apartment.
Oh, okay. Is it a steamboat?
The boat I lived on is the tugboat Arthur Foss. It's the oldest wood tugboat afloat in the world. And the boat I work on is a steamship.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen them resurrecting some steam engines and hit or miss stuff on YouTube. It's amazing. I mean, they can bring stuff back to life that's been sitting in the woods for, you know, decades.
Now, if the thing was built skookum to begin with, then makes it easier to bring it back to life.
By the way, one of the channels that I watch is a steam powered machine shop on YouTube. Now he's in winter hiatus at the moment, but it might be interesting to steam aficionados. He has a regular machine shop. And then he has one that's built around, theoretically, 1925 or so, a line shaft-driven, steam engine-powered chop.
I, could you toss the link to the YouTube channel in the show notes? Because that'd be cool. Or put it up on IRC or something.
Yeah, I'm going to try to dig that out. Right now, I don't have the show notes up, so I'm going to have to dig that up, but I'll do a little Google fool and get around.
So if they do the fireworks up your way, are you going to watch them from the boat?
Yeah, actually, because where we dock is line of sight with the space needle where they shoot the fireworks from.
Oh, they shoot them from the needle. That's pretty cool.
So yeah, that's where I've been for New Year's for the last, well, I think every New Year's I've lived here, actually.
That's cool.
Yeah, we don't take the boat out into the lake because, well, for one thing, we don't need to because it's already line of sight where we dock. But also, there's a lot of amateurs out there that are going to be very drunk.
Yeah, that is true. Now, is it pretty cold up there in the Northwest?
It's like 50 today.
That's about what it is here, too.
Yeah, it doesn't actually get that cold up here. Like, although, funny thing is, I live north of about 70% of the population of Canada.
All right, gentlemen, I need a little guidance on where I should put my contribution to the show notes.
There's a link to it on the, if you go to hackpublicradio.org, right near the very beginning, there's a link that'll have, that'll give, there's a link to my Etherpad there, so.
Okay. Which Zulu are we?
Huh?
Which time segment are we in?
Oh, gotcha.
Apparently we just missed New Year's for Afghanistan by like 4 minutes. Is I guess their time is shifted by 30 minutes from everybody else.
To be completely honest, it really doesn't matter which time part you put it in, as long as it's next in the segment of links. Because I'll just pretty much go straight down that line, and if there's a link in there, I'll be able to find it.
Well, if the rain lets up, then a friend of mine are going to go around and... they're going to be in their fursuit, and then we'll be taking pictures of them.
I think I missed that. What? You're going to be taking pictures of them in what?
In fursuit.
What's fursuit?
They're furry.
Oh, fursuit. Gotcha.
Honky, the second David Richards is supposed to be a link, but I don't know if it came over as a link.
Okay.
Ah. Apparently the number of people driving in Seattle... is dropping on a annual basis. Everyone's either taking the bus or driving, or taking the bus or riding bikes or walking.
I was just going to say, even in Southern Cal, we hear about how bad the traffic is in Seattle.
Actually, I found interesting the new accommodation requirement that if you're doing home renovation or building or business building in Seattle, you have to have accommodations for the homeless.
That is not true.
Oh, really? Sorry about that. I apologize. It was maybe it's Portland. Sometimes I get a brain fade.
In fact, the mayor of Seattle is very anti-homeless and is a former federal prosecutor. Not exactly a raving communist.
Yeah, then it must have been Portland. They decided to solve the homeless problem by forcing everybody else to take care of it.
Anyway, the way you solve the traffic problem, at least in a city like Seattle, like there's no space to build more roads. So the only way you can solve the traffic problem is to get fewer cars on the road, and so that means better bus service.
Well, actually, Boston has taken a slice out of that. What you basically do is take your big highways and bury them underground.
We tried that. We spent a few billion dollars on a tunnel under downtown, and the above-ground road it replaced had something like 5 times the traffic that the below-ground tunnel gets. People just aren't using it. So we basically wasted a few billion dollars on something that no one uses.
Well, since Boston was pretty much choking, also a lot of people in Boston are going to points north, being able to bypass the actual connections to the city where was a bonus. Seattle doesn't really have a lot of points north with heavy traffic requirements.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there's Vancouver, but that's Canada.
Well, Boston is, you know, 3 whole states north of us. Some of whom are remarkably sane.
So, anyway, the only way that at least Seattle is going to fix the traffic problems is to get rid of cars. You know, at least make it so that people don't drive to work every day. And unfortunately, we're about to the point where the only way to continue the current trend is to start enforcing tolls downtown or something like that. Because, you know, like, I have a neighbor who, well, we both live a block from the bus stop. and the bus comes every 6 minutes. And where my neighbor works is downtown, a block from a bus stop, and yet he drives every single day. He doesn't ride the bus, and there's no reason for him to drive. He doesn't go to the grocery store every day, and it's just silly. So he's adding to the traffic problem. He's contributing to the problem, and just because his personal convenience is more important than the common good.
Well, that's what London has turned on. In the central city, they have a congestion fee.
There's talk of doing that here, and that's probably going to be the thing that's going to be required to get people to stop driving downtown. Of course, the flip side of that is the police here don't enforce traffic laws, so people will probably still drive downtown anyway and just not pay the fee. I've never lived anywhere where the police force was so useless as it is in Seattle. They do absolutely nothing to enforce traffic laws.
Well, I'm a pedestrian. One of the interesting things that I found out here is we have a two-tier public transportation system. They have commuter rail, which is focused on those who drive cars, and then they have the buses and subways, which is focused on those that don't drive.
I'm sorry, I must... could you repeat that last part?
They have the commuter rail, which is focused on providing an alternative to those who drive, and then they have buses and subways in a parallel system, which is focused on those who don't drive.
Well, here, there is a limited amount of commuter rail. If you live up in Everett or down in Tacoma, you could ride the train up to Seattle, but that's about it. There used to be an interurban network, but that got all ripped out here about 80 years ago. And of course, now they're spending billions of dollars putting it back again.
Well, what I find interesting is a few blocks from my house, there's a commuter rail station. A block from my house, there's a bus stop. They're very careful, however, to keep a couple of blocks distance between the bus stop and the commuter rail station.
A lot of times that sort of thing happens because there's people on the board that are actively trying to sabotage public transit. And so they deliberately do little things like that to make it slightly harder to use. Like here we have on the Sound Transit board, there's a dude that's extremely anti-transit. And he's always doing everything he can to sabotage any efforts to make transit here better.
Yes, well, we have slow and reasonably wide open transit, and then we have fast, but it's focused largely on commuters.
I will say something like half the population of Seattle rides a bus every day in Seattle. So I'm very glad at least of that. If all those people drove instead, then you just wouldn't be able to get around. It would be total gridlock.
Yeah, my brother's a long-haul trucker, and sometimes he has to deal with the lost city of Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta, and there's several cities in Texas are extreme demonstrations of what happens if you design your entire city around cars and only cars, and everything else is second class, and it winds up being really bad for everybody.
Well, as a trucker, Atlanta has solved its trucking traffic problem by banning trucks on through routes unless they're doing a delivery within Atlanta.
Well, I mean, trucks are such a small chunk of the problem, though, that that's like saying, oh, that's like doing the straw ban. Like, it's stupid.
Well, the Beltway, I guess, is insane.
Yeah, the northern routes into Los Angeles are lots of truck traffic. I mean, on a four-lane highway, you may have three lanes of trucks.
Oh, gentlemen, Some of the geniuses in Congress would like to have a national 55-mile-an-hour speed limit for trucks.
Yeah, we have that in California, and it doesn't work. That's one of the reasons you have three lanes of truck traffic heading south, is because you have some people that follow that, and you have the others that they're just trying to get their delivery done, so they need to pass them.
Hey, they're trying to solve problems the complete opposite way of the way they need to be solved.
Well, also, California does not believe in 53-foot tractor trailers. So trucks have to have their rear wheels moved, the rear bogey moved into the California hole, which doesn't sometimes make sense from a loading standpoint, but is required because California has screwy engineering standards.
I have to admit, my biggest complaint with California is people from California moving to Seattle.
Yeah, there's far too many people here.
Well, my dad, God rest his soul, said the liberals in Massachusetts were moving up into Vermont and New Hampshire because of low taxes and, you know, limited government, limited this, limited that. But they were bringing their same attitudes with them. And it really was polluting the water.
Well, Seattle's going the other way. It's a bunch of conservatives moving in. Seattle, 50 years ago, was 95% unionized.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I'm sorry?
Unfortunately, a lot of conservatives are "I've got mine" types.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And a lot of them work for the big company that starts with an A and has a smile for their logo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as a funny side thing, I went over to Jeff Bezos' balls the other day and stroked them in the hopes that some of his wealth would trickle out, but nothing happened. I just had a security guard run me away.
Yes, I was watching a podcast about gender roles and stuff, and one of the guys said the reason there aren't women in CEO position is that they're sane. The guys who get on top are just absolutely nuts. 80-hour work weeks and, you know, no life outside the job.
And they build giant balls as a statue to themselves.
Yes. Well, I'm conservative and chivalrous, which flies like lead balloon around here. People are saying we have to have women in these executive positions. If you translate into real world terms, we have to get more women into insane positions. Say what?
Maybe they're hoping that if women come in, it won't be so insane.
Well, around here, a lot of women go into our local beaches and go into the ocean. And unfortunately, their sweetness has not reduced its salt content. And the problem is...
Go ahead.
The problem is that, yes, the women will go up, but the only women that succeed tend to be turned into the same kind of flexible morals, shall we say, sharks, as their male counterparts.
Yeah, I was going to say that I wasn't so much... I mean, I used to work all kinds of hours and, you know, anytime they'd ask me to come in, I would come in until my youngest grandson was born. And now it's like, no, I've already worked 40 hours. I'm going to get on video and talk to my grandson.
I am a card-carrying member of the IWW. Also, MEBA.
Yeah, I've never worked in a unionized workplace.
Well, if you go into marine engineering, well... They do anything marine related. It's outside of little small charter vessels or fishing boats, it's going to be unionized.
Good for them.
Yeah. The unions tend to have interesting friends. Like Mr. Luciano.
Well, I mean, I'm not exactly saying that unions are perfect, but it's better than nothing. The alternative is the boss man walks all over you and shits all over you.
Agreed.
I had some interesting insights from an uncle who lived down in Baton Rouge. I don't recall his business, but labor has had an interesting interaction with management down there. He said a manager would ask his workers to do something, and they would do it. If he told his workers to do something, things wouldn't go well.
Well, that's kind of just management 101 right there, you know. Treat your employees like humans, and you'll get better work out of them.
Well, I'm up here around New England where unions tend to be a little different. My brother was working installing telephone cable and whatnot, and as last joined, he was in the union, and he got laid off, but the union still wanted their dues, so he found that to be a little impractical. Yeah, a friend of mine who was in media production said that after you get to a certain size, you have to have a Teamsters representative, a steward, on the job to basically allow your union systems to function. But then again, the unions have been a great boon to automation.
I must apologize. My telephone rang and I had to answer that. But yeah, being in the union and working a union job, and my experience is light years ahead and better than working the non-union jobs in North Carolina.
Well, it can be. It depends on who the union's working for. I mean, in a lot of areas, the unions do some good, but some of them are less functional. I mean, you know, shipbuilding up here, that sort of thing.
Well, my MEBA dues are basically not much different than what I used to pay for health insurance and all that stuff. And in exchange for that, I get health insurance for the MEBA and retirement and all kinds of shiny stuff like that. Training. And it's basically the same amount as I was paying for health insurance and all that sort of thing when I was working for Red Hat in North Carolina.
Well, I'm saying when it works for you. Now, in some areas, the unions are looking for a very high minimum wage except for union jobs, which would, leaves me to be curious about what kind of wages would be allowed under union.
Well, in places that are, in places where you don't have a lot of strong unions, the wages are a lot lower. And I say this from experience. I was an electrician, a licensed electrician in North Carolina. And what I made there is probably a quarter of what a union electrician makes pretty much anywhere with strong unions. Like, I mean, and it's pretty ridiculous, the difference in wages.
Again, there are some unions that work for the member, and then there are some unions who are secondary management.
Well, oh, yeah. I forgot to say Happy New Year's to Russia.
Russia's pretty big. Don't they have multiple time zones?
I think Russia is like all one time zone. It's all Moscow time. But also, Happy New Year's to Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Muscat. And also, it is time for me to take my leave, and I'm going to go downtown and fuck around for a little while. Yeah, I'll take care now.
Well, take care. Be careful. And you're welcome back anytime, of course. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll probably be back on later this evening. So, anyway, see y'all later.
And to those in Muscat, thank you for your lovely beverage.
I wonder if that'll work. So these people have all turned off.
I mean, they turned off.
Like they muted themselves. I feel like that.
Someone around?
Hello, you still out there?
Yeah, I'm here, Origami. It's Tony.
Oh, hey, Tony. I don't know who was... I'm echoing again. I don't know what's going on.
That Paul.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, have you got... Someone got speakers open?
Maybe.
No. Do you want to say hi?
Say hi, Sally.
Hi.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, fine.
No, we never used this before.
Yeah, it's better if you use a headset because we're getting an echo from the speakers.
Okay. Is that better?
That sounds a little bit, yeah. I can't hear myself so much.
Yeah, unless you're using push to talk, our voices come back to us through your channel.
Okay.
But other than that, your audio sounds good.
Yeah, it did.
Good Lord, I'm still finding bottle rockets.
You finding what?
Bottle rockets.
Bottle rockets.
Ah. Yeah, I'm going through inventorying our fireworks collection so we know what to get. And I just keep coming up with more bottle rockets.
I don't do fireworks.
I finally got my son to love them as much as I do.
Now, when I was a child, my we celebrate Guy Fawkes Night over here on the 5th of November, or a few days either side of that. And tradition is that you have a bonfire and you have fireworks. And when we were little, when I was about 8 or 9, the smallest box of fireworks you could get at the time cost 5 shillings back in the 1960s. And my parents gave us the option. We could either burn 5 shillings or we could have 2 and 6 pence between me and me and my sister. So we decided to have the money. And I've been a skimflint ever since.
Yeah, that sounds like something a parent would do, eh?
Yeah, I suppose it was a lesson in the value of money. But
yeah,
I didn't say.
Then there's.
Go on, then there's.
Okay, sorry. I was going to say, yeah, but then there's, you know, the amount of pleasure or joy that you can get from that, you know, and you do fireworks or something else. So, yeah, whatever.
Mm, yeah, I didn't save them any money because they still spent the 5 shillings. They just gave me and my sister the 5 shillings between us.
Right, understood. All right, Tony, well, let me go on with this, and I'll just be listening. But
I just bobbed in because I heard a couple of voices, so because I've been listening, and there's been no one there, so.
Yeah, same here. There were some people on early this morning, for me anyway.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really speak at the time, so I didn't chime in much.
Hello there. I've also been lurking for a few minutes as well.
Hi, Wimpy. How are you?
Hello. Very well. How are you?
Not too bad. I've been geeking out with Matchbox models for the last couple of months.
What, as in teeny tiny ones or like larger scale models?
No, teeny tiny ones. The original small scale Matchbox.
Is this rediscovering stuff you've already got or buying new things?
No, buying new stuff. I came from a working class family that didn't have an awful lot of money to throw around when I was 8, 9, 10. So I could never afford them at the time. So I'm kind of reliving my youth.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that going on amongst our generation right now, revisiting the sort of the luxury items that we could never quite afford.
Yeah,
Yeah. But I'm talking about the 60s, so it was the original. It wasn't these ones with the flashy wheels and that you race down a track. It was the ones that came with the. They were more realistic looking wheels than.
Yeah. So I think you might be half a generation older than me because I grew up in the 70s.
Yeah, you're a similar generation to Popey.
Yeah, we're both 1972 vintage human meat bags.
Yeah, I'm 1958 vintage. Yeah, I was talking to Popey about when he got into computers earlier on, and when he was getting his first computer, I was a merchant navy engineer in the middle of the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, you're a good 10 years ahead of us in that regard, I think. Yeah,
yeah. So I got into computers a bit later because they never came into school when I I left.
No, they wouldn't have been. Yeah,
no. So we all have our eras. So what you've been up to? Have you? Oh, that, while you're on, how's progress going on with Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi?
Well, if I'm honest, there's been zero progress there from my point of view. Every so often, I need to just take a bit of a break from. There's kind of this blur between what is work and what is my hobby.
Yeah.
And then when your hobby starts feeling like work, your passion dies for it a little bit.
Yeah, so, I can understand that.
Yeah, so I've taken a bit of a step back. So if you spoke to Popey earlier, he may have hinted at some silly nonsense we've been doing recently, which
is... With the gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about the 8-bit gaming.
Right, okay. So yeah, we've been revisiting that. So that has become my sort of, since the release of 1910, working on that and figuring out how we can do that has been like my pastime.
Yeah, a bit of a switch off.
Yeah, and that's been good. It's been refreshing and energizing. So, yeah, so I'm enjoying that. And, you know, after we come back after this sort of, you know, holiday period, then it'll be more, you know, stuff to do with Ubuntu Mate and work. But, I've been enjoying just playing some computer games with my mate, frankly.
Sounds good, actually.
Yeah, it's really good fun. It's, we're trying to recreate what it was like to go around your mate's house with your 8-bit computer back in the day and play those games. And that's what we're doing. And we're recreating the arguments that go with it as well.
Oh, great. When you do get round to coming back to Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi, we're thinking about doing another Raspberry Pi special on Mintcast.
All right, okay.
Maybe you could come and talk about it.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm always up for, you know, having a chat with, you know, other podcasters and people in the community about this stuff and encouraging them to get involved. So, yeah, totally, no problem.
Yeah, I like your recent brunch with Brett interview. That was good.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun. All credit to him, I think, really.
Like it. Yeah, it did sound like it, actually. Yeah. And you did Big Daddy interview you, Rocco, as well.
Yeah, I did. I did a thing with Rocco like 2 weeks after brunch with Brent. Yeah. So, yeah, I did a few things, obviously, with the change of role. I was a bit surprised, actually. I mean, where else would internal, you know, reallocation of staff create that much interest outside of the organization? It's a bit weird, but yeah, so I did the rounds on some of the podcasts at that time. It was good fun.
Yeah, that, I think if I remember correctly, the interview with Rocco was a couple of hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it didn't feel like it. So I just followed his lead. He just said, well, we're just going to record for as long as it takes to record, and I'm going to ask the questions and you're going to answer them and we'll see where the conversation goes. I think it was 2.5 hours, which I realise a lot of people just aren't going to have the time or patience.
Well, I think I split it into two sessions.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. No, but it was a good interview. Both of them were, actually. Really interesting.
Yeah, they were good fun.
Yeah. So how are you settling into the new day job?
Yeah, I think I've just about figured it out now. So I'm looking forward to getting back next week. And we've got a lot lined up and a lot going on. And yeah, the commercial dynamics of that position are something that most people will never hear about or really appreciate. But there's, you know, there's a big part of it is, you know, being successful with the OEMs. And that's something that I'm going to put a lot of energy into, which won't resonate very much, you know, at, you know, in the community. But I think it's important for the sustainability of what we're doing. So that's where a big part of my focus is right now, sort of from a work point of view.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have all those problems with work or anything like that these days.
Have you packed it in now? Are you all retired?
Oh, yeah. I've been retired just over 5 years now.
Wow. Well, what's that like? No. But what's that like? 6 years. So what's that like? How does that, you know, how does that feel? What's your week to week, your day to day like?
Actually, as I've said a few times, I hardly believe that I ever had time to go to work some days.
I can believe that totally.
Two podcasts, various hobbies. I go to the gym. I do, you know, I'm a member of my local lug and makerspace.
Right.
Which, you know,
lug, by the way?
Blackpool.
Right. Okay. I live in Blackpool. Yeah, they're quite active up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've got old Chiefy, Les.
Yeah.
He's one of our stalwarts.
Yeah.
And he runs the local Raspberry Jam once a month. So sometimes I go to that. Various other things. I used to go to a regular computer auction once a month over in Bolton. And that's where I've got a lot of my second-hand computers in the past. But
right.
Unfortunately, earlier on this year, the couple that ran it decided to retire themselves.
Okay.
So I've no longer got an active access to cheap computing stuff. But luckily I picked up a few bargains before we shut shop.
Right, okay.
So I've probably got too much technology here anyway, so
it's probably good. Yeah, I've been giving a lot of mine away over recent years because I've just accumulated so much that I can't use, you know, routinely. So through my daughter's school, I've been finding, you know,
new homes for things.
Yeah, exactly. You know, families that are, you know, in my daughter's circle of friends that, you know, don't have, you know, computers to do the kids' homework on. So I've been dishing out computers to some of them, which is, you know, good for me because it makes a bit of space. But I was shocked to learn I've still got like 17 laptops knocking around the place. It's just too much.
Yeah, well, I haven't quite got that many, but I am in double figures.
Yeah, yeah. But I haven't purchased most. A lot of these are from, like, the things I've been doing with, like, GPD, where they provide the hardware and I provide the firmware for the hardware. So
right.
I think seven of them are, like, you know, those. But yeah. Every time I get one of those, then that's another laptop in my crate of laptops from the past I don't need. So I try and find a home for one of those.
Yeah. Have you tried homeless charities?
I haven't. Really, because I haven't needed to. You know, it's surprising just in your immediate circle.
There's always someone who needs
something. Yeah, there really is. And it's always not just someone. There's like a queue of people. So I've never struggled to find a good home for a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, occasionally I get given laptops and someone will say, oh, I've just bought myself a new one or I haven't used it for a couple of years because I've got a tablet or whatever. And I'll either resurrect it if it will run modern Windows. I generally put that on because that's what people expect. But
right.
Sometimes I put Linux on it if it's not really up to the mark with Windows 10. Although that's not too bad nowadays because you can get away with 4 gig of RAM and a decent processor. But if I get it up and running and I can't find a use for it, I'll give it to a local homeless organisation that works with has got a hostel and they resettle people back into the community. Because so many people need a computer to access benefit systems and all that now.
Yeah, I mean,
these lads can't afford it.
Yeah, there's just an assumption that everything is everyone can get online to access things these days.
Yeah, well, the government assumed that everyone can go into a library and sit at a library desk for 6 hours a day, but most libraries have a maximum amount of time that you're allowed to use a computer for.
Right.
Or they used to. You used to be able to log on, and after 2 hours, you'd get kicked off.
Yeah.
And nowadays, benefits require you to do 6 to 8 hours of job searches a day if you're on job-related benefits, yeah. Work-related benefits. So you really do need a computer at home. So a lot of these, you know, a lot of these people can't afford just to go out and spend even second-hand money, you know, 100, 150 quid.
Oh, yeah.
To get
a
laptop.
Yeah.
That's beyond a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've heard. We talk about what represents a cheap computer, but, you know, what represents a cheap computer for most people is beyond the means of many.
Yeah. Especially in this neck of the woods in Blackpool. We've got 8 of the 10 most deprived boroughs in the country in Blackpool.
Wow.
But not boroughs, areas, sorry.
Right.
Districts within boroughs. We've got 8 of the 10 most deprived in the country.
Okay.
Just in Blackpool. So, yeah, it's difficult for a lot of people.
Yep.
But I'm not sure if you're aware of it. It's not a UK charity, but the Destination Linux Network, they're currently running a fundraiser for a organization in the States that does similar thing, that provides
second-hand
equipment.
Yeah, I saw Zeb was doing a thing for Free Geek. I got Geek. To join it for literally a handful of moments over the holiday period because we were away. And yeah, I just popped in and said hello, and that was literally all the time I had for that.
I didn't realize it was Christmas Day. I thought it was going to be a couple of days after Christmas Day or just
yeah,
before New Year.
I mean, I you know, obviously that's a great cause, but I feel like the timing was not quite right. That feels like doing it not then might have garnered more support. Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a funny day, Christmas Day, to do it. But Zeb pitched up on Big Daddy Linux a couple of days later.
I mean, I've met Zeb a few times now at various events. And, you know, he's not a young bloke, and neither am I.
No, he's my age.
You know, I don't think I could do a 24-hour thing now.
No, he said never again. Never again.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, he said you couldn't give him $1 million to do it again. Ellie.
Yeah, yeah, I think that would be tough. I don't think I'd want to do that. Yeah,
but yeah, all kudos
to him. I think I could do a 12-hour thing, but not 24.
Yeah, yeah, I think 12 hours, because that's if you do it at normal time, you know, with the sleep period and all that, you could probably do that without it disturbing your sleep pattern and your daily routine pattern too much.
Yeah, and also not like taking you into the wall or anything, you know.
Yeah, I think he had short breaks every 2 or 4 hours or something during the actual challenge.
Right.
But literally they were just, I think, 10 or 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, that's not long enough really, is it?
No, I think if you were doing it for a record though, I think that probably a little bit more than you probably. I'm not sure because I'm not sure of the rules of these things. But he wasn't doing it for a record. He was just doing it for personal enjoyment and to raise a few quid. But yeah,
I don't think I could do anything that I enjoy that much for 24 hours without beginning to hate it.
Yeah, yeah. I went for a walk this afternoon with a few walking friends, and one of the lads is really serious into his walking and jogging and stuff. And he was talking about a marathon jog, but even that's only 8 hours.
Right, yeah. And that's a long time. That's enough time to get you from sort of London to Toronto.
Walking?
No, if you're on a plane, you know.
Oh, if you're on a plane, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But if you know, if you're jogging at 4 miles an hour, 8 hours, you've done a marathon.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but I couldn't do that anyway. The arthritis doesn't let me.
No, quite.
So, are you up to anything else geeky or non-geeky at the moment?
Right now, I'm just coming out the other side of having a massive chill out and relax. I think the most geeky thing on the horizon is Popey and I are going to do another 8-bit gaming live stream in the next couple of days.
You live stream it, do you?
Yeah, we do it. We live stream it on Twitch, and then we export what we do from Twitch to YouTube, top and tail it, and then release it on YouTube a couple of days later.
So whose account is it released under, yours or Popey's?
No, it's a joint thing, so it's under the guise of 8-bit Versus.
8-bit Versus.
Oh, yeah, 8-bit for 8bitversus.com.
Go and check that out.
I've just pasted it in the chat here.
Oh, right, okay.
But it took us 8 months to figure out how to do it. I needed to actually write some code to make it all happen.
Yeah. Well, I'll check that out properly later. Look at that. Yeah. Well, I do like it when Popey pulls that funny face of his.
Well, he has many funny faces, so which one are you referring to?
Well, he's there's a couple of front pages of YouTube, and the third one down, he's pulling that one with his bottom lip coming up over his top lip.
Yeah.
He does that sometimes on Biddle when he's on there.
Yeah.
Let's have a look what new year we're coming up to. Oh, someone already said Moscow, but that's coming up in 5 minutes. They must have got their timings wrong.
Hey, Moscow. No, Moscow shouldn't be for another 3 hours.
No, according to this, it's... oh, no, am I on the wrong... No, it says Tuesday night.
The next one is Iraq, Baghdad, and Nairobi, and Addis Ababa.
No, you've missed that. We're on 2055 now.
Well, that one says it was 2100, which is 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, Moscow is 20. Moscow, Russia, and 22 more is 2100, which is 5 minutes. That's what I'm saying. It's new. It'll be New Year there. That doesn't seem right, though, does it? I thought Moscow was way...
Moscow's only 2 hours different from us.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So it should be 2200.
Is this because this is UTC and we're not UTC, right?
We are UTC because we're Greenwich Mean Time. And UTC and Greenwich Mean Time are exactly the same.
So it's five minutes to midnight in Moscow right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it'll be their new year in 5 minutes, or 3 minutes according to my clock on my computer.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 3 hours different right now. Yeah, that's unusual. It's usually 2 hours different. I don't understand. Okay.
Unless they don't do daylight saving.
Who can know? It's that needs to just go away globally.
That could be it. It might be that Russia
doesn't change and it's like 2 hours. Yeah, could well
be 2 hours during the summer. And
yeah.
You obviously are well versed with time zones. Then,
well,
all the travel somewhat
because we're a distributed company. And prior to that, I worked in the aviation industry and everything centered around UTC. So it didn't actually matter where in the world you were. Everyone spoke one common, time signature. But I still struggle, because the last job I had, we had an office in Arizona, and they're one of the few places which don't observe daylight savings. So, it's all quite complicated, regardless. And I think the whole daylight savings thing could do with just going away. I don't think it serves any useful purpose these days.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. Yeah. The analogy that someone I saw said was, it's like having an unsliced loaf and cutting off a quarter at one end and moving it to the other end of the loaf and tagging it back on the other end of the loaf.
Yeah.
Because that's all you're doing. You're just shifting it from one end to the other.
Yeah, it's just a bad rounding error, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it would just make life so much simpler if we didn't have to worry about... And then you get different parts of the world change their daylight saving at different times. So when we're recording Mintcast, there's about a week, maybe two, depending on where it falls for America and where it falls here, where suddenly the time difference changes.
Yeah.
And you've got to work out what time you're actually joining the stream to do record the show.
Yeah, been that.
So I don't suppose you've got anywhere near planning the curry yet, have you?
No, we haven't. We haven't exited the other side of not talking about the podcast yet. So we enter a state of silence. Although in this case, Mark has obviously entered baby fog, and Popey and I went directly into 8-bit gaming fog. But usually around the end of January, we start to chat to one another about, well, okay, we need to start thinking about what we're going to do. And then we organise a curry and have a think about it.
Yeah. And then pretend that you're deciding whether to come back or not.
Well, everyone thinks this, but it is a genuine decision. Is. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and, no. More so this year, right? Mark has now got a young family.
Yeah.
There's more reason that, in fact, I've not been involved all that long, but every year I've been involved, there's been a good reason as to why it might not happen again. But, then it does. But this year there are better reasons than ever as to why we might just pack it in this year and it won't happen again. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of sad people if that happens, but you've been going for 12 years, but
yeah, we're mindful of that as well. So it won't be a decision that's taken lightly for sure, but
I think Mintcast and Ubuntu UK, as it was when I first started listening to it, were the first two Linux related podcasts that I got into.
Right. Yeah, I've been listening to the Ubuntu cast for donkey's years.
Mm. I started using Linux back in 2007 when I started recycling old Pentium 4s. Pentium 3 and Pentium 4s, and trying to find a decent operating system other than Windows XP to put on them.
Yeah.
And
you even think there was another operating system?
What do you mean, opposed to Linux?
No. So, coming from a world where there's Windows, why did you even think there was something else? Yeah.
I used to get Micromart. Phil Thane used to write the Ubuntu's Beginners page.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to read it. But at the time, I was, I was a confirmed Windows user. Everything I did was on Windows. But then I started to get into the hardware side of it and I refurbished my mum's old PC. She'd passed away a few years ago. My dad said, I've still got this PC in the house. And he gave it me and said, you're a little bit into computers. You have a look at it and you can have that. And I thought, well, it was only a Pentium. I think it was a Pentium 2 or a Pentium 3. And I thought, right. So I got the hardware working. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with it? I don't want it. I've got a P4, 2.8 gig sat in the corner. It's no good to me. I wonder if there's anyone who might want it. And then I'd heard of FreeCycle. I thought, I'll see if there's anyone out there that might want it.
Right.
And one of the rules that FreeCycle had was everything has to be perfectly legal. Well, there was no COA on the PC. So even though I'd got it up and running with Windows, because I'd got a Moody disk that I could install it on any machine, I thought I can't give it away with that on because it's not legal. And I'd been, like I said, I'd been reading Phil's articles in the Micromart. I thought, this is Linux. And he keeps talking about this Ubuntu stuff that's made Linux easy to install. So I thought, I'll see if I can get hold of a disk. And I think I managed to get a cover disk it probably would have been 704.
Right.
And I'm not sure if originally I got to the vanilla Ubuntu, whether I got Xubuntu. But I ended up installing Ubuntu on this machine, and it worked. All right, there was still a few things that I had to figure out how to get working, but Ethernet worked.
Yeah.
There's a few issues with codecs, but then I got chatting with a few people in the local FreeCycle community who did similar stuff, and these two guys were both into Linux, and they told me about Medibuntu and all this kind of stuff. And,
I remember that back in the day.
And I got everything working somehow on this tower. Like I said, I think I ended up giving it away with Xubuntu because of the resources on the machine. It was a little bit lighter and made it a little bit snappier. Gave it away. And I thought, quite enjoy this, you know, getting things working and someone getting the benefit out of it. And I put a call out on FreeCycle for any old computers in my area. And I ended up getting given loads of stuff. And over the next couple of years, I think I did about 30 computers.
Wow.
All with Linux on them. And during that period of time, because I was installing it on a regular basis onto these computers, of course, I did a dual boot on my own machine. I think at one stage, I actually used the Wubby install in Windows as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But so it looked like I was dual booting, but I was actually running Linux from within Windows.
Right, right.
And then I did a true dual boot, but back in 2009, I'd gone back to university in late 2007, and I was at university, and I was in hospital for at the beginning of May. I came home, and my tower PC had a big meltdown. So I ended up having to reinstall the PC, and I didn't reinstall Windows. I just installed Ubuntu because I thought, I've not been using the Windows partition at all. So I just installed Ubuntu, and I've been using Linux ever since. I went over to Mint when Ubuntu went over to the Unity desktop in 2011.
Right, yeah.
So Mint has been my daily driver ever since, but... As I said on the recent distro hoppers, you know, if it wasn't for Mark and, you know, Ubuntu being released, I'd never got into Linux because it was just, for me, it was too geeky. Yeah. Got a lot to thank Ubuntu for, you know, Linux journey-wise.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people stepped away from Ubuntu when Unity first came along, and I don't think it was... because of Unity per se, but because Unity just wasn't ready then, it was kind of just, you know, put out there.
I never gave it a chance as whether it was ready or not. It, for me, the interface was just foreign.
Right.
You know, I like my taskbar at the bottom, my menu on the left-hand side of that taskbar, and if I want to, I can pin various application shortcuts onto my taskbar, and I'm quite happy. but you couldn't do that with Unity. So that's why I jumped ship. Because at the time, Mint was still using GNOME 2, and then they developed Mate when GNOME went down the similar kind of design kind of ethos. So, but yeah, I had a go at GNOME for December's episode of Distro Hoppers. And if you want to stick with it, for me, the only way to do it was to make it look as much like Mate or Cinnamon as you could, which I believe is what Pop OS does, isn't it?
No, not really. They stick to like the GNOME paradigm, but they add some extra look and feel on top.
Right. Okay. But they don't put a bottom taskbar with a menu.
No.
No, it's just the way I like it. So I did end up, you know, I installed GNOME Tweaks. I installed the, Arc Menu, did a couple of other things and managed to get it to be as familiar as I could. So, and I, you know, for the rest of the time I used it, it was okay. I've got nothing under the hood. Ubuntu's brilliant. I've got no complaints with it. But if I was going to use it full time, I'd use your desktop. I'd use the Mate desktop, or I'd use XFCE.
Yeah.
Because they just fit the way I learned computing.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, I think I might have to Foxtrot Oscar. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Nice chatting to you.
And you. Nice to chat to you. And if we do come back next year, I hope you'll continue listening.
Oh, I will. I will. And I'll ping you a message and about possibly coming on Mintcast at some time.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, I'll be more than happy to.
Okay. Cheers, Martin.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.